I'd like to call this Planning Commission meeting to order. It is Monday, March 8th of 2021. It is 6:31 p.m. and we will start our meeting out by having a roll call. Darcy, do you want to accommodate us, please?
Sure. Commissioner Phillips?
Present.
Commissioner Lopes?
Here.
Commissioner Murphy?
Present.
Commissioner Pack?
Here.
Commissioner Pasco?
Present.
Commissioner Peterson?
Here.
Commissioner Schrodel?
Present.
Commissioner Wilson? Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Darcy, very much. All right, public comment. And then we just take a moment here to ask if there are any public comments for items that are not on the agenda. So I do believe I see 10 attendees. Do we see any, if anyone out there would like to bring up a topic that again is not on the agenda, please use the raise hand feature so we can call on you.
Okay, do people understand that this is for items that are not on the agenda? Okay, so I have three hands up. I have Jane Morrison, followed by Bruce Parker, followed by Suzanne Wolf.
Very good. Hi, Jane. Hi, did you want to bring up a topic for the Planning Commission this evening?
Yeah, and it's actually a very general question. Since I haven't participated in many Planning Commission meetings in the past, are these recorded and is there a transcript that goes along with it that will be available to the public? And if so, when?
They are recorded. They will most likely be posted by tomorrow afternoon. There will be minutes, but those have to be approved at the next Planning Commission meeting.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Jane?
Nope.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us. I hope you're able to stay on. And our next input, Darcy?
I have Bruce Parker.
Welcome, Bruce, if you want to unmute yourself.
Ah, can I be heard now?
Yes, now we can hear you. What would you like to bring before the Planning Commission this evening?
Well, I am Bruce Parker. I am the chairperson of the Clackamas Pedestrian Bikeway Advisory Committee, and I'm acting as a citizen today. Please consider adding the Molalla River Path / traversal section and the coordinating with the City of Canby as an item on your long-range planning work program. The background. Canby has a multi-use path running from the Willamette River through Canby to Southeast 13th Street, affectionately known as the logging road. It is the most heavily used park in the city of Canby. If it is a part of the Molalla River logging road, which was owned by Orhauser and other private companies to transport logs from the Cascade foothills to the Willamette River up to the mid-1970s. Many sections have reverted to local owners and the city of Molalla and Canby. And 2017, a 3.3-mile section and 81.3 acres was generously donated to the city of Canby for a multi-use trail by the Traversal family, potentially extending the present multi-use path. With a Mount Hood Territorial Development Grant, the city of Canby began developing a master plan for the Traversal donation in 2020. Currently, the City of Canby and Parametrics consultants are near completion of a draft master plan. The significance of the traversal section is part of the principal active transportation route from Canby to Molalla in the country's adopted active transportation plan and also the TSP task number 2038. its significance, it also doubles the length of the multi-use path to about 7.1 miles. On completion of this section, either Maxburg Road or Elijah Road could be used to connect with low volume rural roads and the possibility of creating a scenic bikeway to the Malala River Scenic Recreation Area. Cyclists and pedestrians could avoid the dangerous Highway 170, the Canby-Markham Highway. Now, why the traversal section should be on the work plan? The city of Canby owns the property, but it's outside the city limits and in the county. Maybe we got potential zoning problems and other issues. Another reason, at least three county roads could be impacted by this project. Southeast 13th, Elijah Road, and Maxburg Road. Also, it's a significant step forward in the active transportation plan in southern Clackamas County. Coordination with the city of Canby is needed. So those are the reasons I think the county should have it on the long-range planning work program. I want to thank you very much for your time and your consideration.
Tammy, you're muted.
Right, sorry. Great. Bruce, thank you very, very much for bringing that to us this evening. Before I ask you you go off, Lorraine or anyone, are there any questions or anything you'd like to bring up to Bruce?
So Bruce did send in this information today. I think he also CC'd Darcy, but it is not a part of your full table that we'll go over today because it wasn't submitted back in December.
Okay, any other questions from or to Bruce? Very good. Bruce, thank you again for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Since he did provide a public comment, can I get your mailing address?
3460 North Holly, Canby, Oregon, 97013.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Did we have a third testimony or topic?
I have Suzanne Wolf.
Hi, Suzanne. Thank you for joining us. Did you want to bring a topic before the Planning Commission?
Tammy, yes, I do, but I chimed in too soon. So we can pass at this time, and I would like to speak when we're addressing the items on the agenda.
Very good. Wonderful. Just stay on, and then we'll have you raise your hand during public comment during that period. So thank you, Suzanne.
Very good. Thank you, Tammy.
Uh-huh. Darcy, anyone else?
Nope, I think we got everyone.
All right, very, very good. All right, then we will move forward to the public meeting, which is, I'll just launch right in. The public meeting is now open for the consideration of the FY 2022-2023 Long Range Plan Work Program. The Planning Commission is charged with making a recommendation on the Long Range Planning Work Program to the Board of County Commissioners. The record from this meeting will be forwarded to the board, which will make the final decision on this matter. The public meeting will be conducted as follows. 1, Planning and Zoning Division staff report. 2, entry into the record of any additional correspondence received. 3, public comment, maximum length 10 minutes for a representative of a Hamlet or CPO community planning organization. And 3 minutes for all others, or more as determined by the chair. 4, closing the public meeting. And 5, Planning Commission discussion and action. Let's see if this is needed. There is a designated time during the meeting when it will be open for public comment. The chair will make it clear when this is. If you want to provide comment, you will utilize raise hand feature in Zoom if that is available to you. attendees on PC and iPad, you have a raise hand button on the Zoom bar, bottom or top, depending on your device. Attendees joining us by telephone, use the *9 to raise your hand. When the moderator switches over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for a moment. Primarily, you will see all participants' cameras, just not the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it is time for you to provide comment. For the record, please state your name and where you are from or who you are representing when you begin. Once you have provided your comments, your microphone will be muted and your screen will return to normal. So I think we will start. The Planning and Zoning Division staff will now present the staff report.
Wonderful. Good evening, Planning Commissioners. It's nice to see you again. I'm Karen Burig. I'm the Long Range Planning Manager. And with me tonight is Lorraine Gonzalez. Both of us will be providing part of the presentation. I do have a presentation that's put together that's short that will help us walk through the materials so you can become familiar with the materials as well as the recommendations. So I'm going to just switch over to my presentation mode. Sure. All right. So tonight we're talking about the Long Range Planning Work Program for fiscal years 22 and 23. And just so people understand, the fiscal year 22 to 23, that covers the time between July 1st, 2021. Fiscal year 22 goes from July 1st, 2021 to June 30th, 2022. So that's fiscal year 22. And then fiscal year 23 from July of 22 all the way to June of 23. So that's the work program we're talking about. It's a two-year work program. Let's see? It's always fun trying to figure out exactly how it is that we change the, hold on just a second. Now I got it. All right. So tonight, we'll be giving you a short presentation. And one of the things that was asked from us from last meeting is to give just a quick overview of the past work program. What kind of successes do we have? What kind of work we're still working on? So I'll touch base on that really briefly. We'll present both information about what we've heard so far about items to be put on the work program, as well as getting into details on the staff recommendation. We'll have the opportunity for public comment on the work program, and you can hear directly from community members regarding the input that's on the work program. And then finally, you'll have time to discuss and develop a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners. So first of all, I want to talk a little bit about last year's work program. So the last work program covered the fiscal years starting in July of 2019, and it goes all the way up to the end of June of 2021. During this time was the first time we actually did a shift. Some of you may remember this, but we used to do the Long Range Planning Work Program on an annual basis. Every year we would go out, we would collect comments, we would provide, we would consolidate those comments, talk to you, and then give a recommendation to the board. And this is something we've been doing for nearly 10 years. But last time around, we really kind of were thinking about how we can make this process better. And there were a couple of changes that we made. One was we changed it to a two-year work program because sometimes these projects took more than a year. And so it was difficult to kind of be able to plan them out when we only had a year's worth of time. And another reason was we constantly felt like we were in the process of creating the work program instead of actually doing the work. So another thing that we had done and we're still implementing is we're grouping things by comprehensive plan category. So as you'll see, and we'll walk through the materials, things are categorized together. So we brought the comments in, we kind of grouped them together and we kind of like comments together. And so let's see, another thing that we did in the last work program is we implemented a concept called an issue paper. And that was this idea, hey, sometimes we get a lot of comments within the same grouping and we need to spend some time thinking about how, what the best approach is to addressing those comments. We might need more information about the time that it will take. And there might be some reasons we might want to prioritize things over other things. And so that was a tool that we also used over the last 2 years. So here in front of you are kind of a, and this was all within your packet as well. We've actually done quite a few things over the last 2 years, especially taking into consideration all of the unique challenges that have been in front of us. So one of the things that we have completed is the, and you worked on, or it's the short-term rental registration and regulation program and the ZDO amendments that were associated with that. We also, and some of you, if you were in the Planning Commission before, we have, we expect to be completed by June 2021, a project for rhododendron sidewalks. So we were able to connect with the TGM program and get a quick response grant. And we have been working with the CPO up there to look at a specific property site and understand how the regulations impact that property site and get community input into what that property site would look like. So that was kind of an item that came out of the last work program and we've really been able to move forward on. We've done work with our County Parks Department on the Barton Park Complex Master Plan, and that work has been completed. They did a whole planning process and they've updated their park master plan. Last month, you heard about the transit development plan. That was a project that has been underway over the last 2 years, and we anticipate it being completed in final action, hopefully in April, if not by early May. Another project that was on last year, the last work program, was to look at the connection, the pedestrian and bicycle connection between Oak Grove and Lake Oswego, and do a feasibility study. So there was a project that was completed looking just at the feasibility of connecting those two areas. And as a part of one of the outcomes of that is at the time, at that time of that project, Lake Oswego determined that they didn't want to participate anymore. They weren't interested in that connection happening at that time. So the recommendation coming out of that project was to actually look at perhaps there are other appropriate locations between Oregon City and the Selwood Bridge for a crossing if it wasn't that, if it wasn't going to happen between Lake Oswego and Oak Grove. Another item which has had a lot of conversation and at the Planning Commission had to do with fee in lieu. That's the fee in lieu of frontage improvements. And so we're hoping, Glenn's hoping to come back to you, if not before June, maybe early into the summer with a whole set of ZDO amendments. And we're hoping that at that point in time, from the work that we've done in the past, that we're going to be able to claim that as something that has been able to be completed. Another project that has been underway for the full past 2 years is the Park Avenue Development and Design Standards Project. We worked very hard with a community over the past year, a community advisory committee, all during the time of COVID, and was able to do different outreach and whatnot, and they put together a recommendation that went to the board. Currently, we're working with the board on a few minor items before we hopefully, we're not quite sure exactly when it's going to happen, but bring those actual changes to the development design standards to you. We had been targeting to get those to you by April, but it looks like they'll probably be pushed out a little bit farther. So as you probably recall, there was a minor amendment and time-sensitive ZDO package that came through. And then we are currently preparing the second package for the 2021 minor and time-sensitive amendments. And then finally, over the past 2 years, we've been working on the Housing Strategies Project. So that for the Housing Strategies Project, that's the one we actually had quite a few different comments in the last work program about different changes that could be made to the zoning development ordinance. We also had input from the Housing Affordability and Homelessness Task Force that had recommendations to make changes to our ZDO. And then there were also state mandated rules that we knew were coming forward. So we used the tool of the issues paper to be able to help us develop a plan for how we would address those different items. And this particular item has been brought before to you in planning meetings, I believe, over the past year. Right now, we are still working on the phase one recommendations. And again, we are hoping to have public hearings with you in the spring. We're kind of, I'm sure at the end of the meeting, Jennifer will talk about some sort of retooling. Some of these stuff is being pushed out a little bit farther. We need to give the board a little time to be able to have an overview since we've gotten a few new members. So we'll be doing some work with the board before we actually bring these to you. So those were all items that we were able to make either complete or make significant progress on. We also have a couple of items that we didn't make significant progress on, and those were a couple of transportation projects. And that had to do with, one had to do with developing a transportation system plan for the area in, that had been the city of Damascus. But over the past 2 years, there's been different litigation going on in that area, so we didn't start that project. But now that is clearly not the city of Damascus. And so we are moving forward with really looking and being able to at least start to identify what projects are important, what transportation projects are important in that area that used to be the city of Damascus. So that's a project we'll be starting up. It had been in the last work program. We're recommending to carry it over. Another project that was similar to that had to do with Art Road Extension in Canby. There's been a lot of staff turnover in Canby, so we've been working with that, and that's a project that we're looking to move into the next work program. And let's see, there was also a couple of others, other projects that actually didn't move forward at all that had to do with, because we thought we were gonna have funding, or we had funding and then that funding was removed. So we had talked a lot about this Stafford area preliminary infrastructure feasibility assessment. That was a project we had originally had on the work program, but we took it off the work program because the funding that we had, we hadn't spent it in enough time and we no longer had it. And then we also had a project about transportation futures, and we were going to do that project if we had gotten funding from the legislature, and we didn't get that funding. So that gives you a kind of a really high level overview of what we were able to complete over the last 2 years. With that, I don't know, I think maybe we'll go through the whole presentation, and then if you guys have questions, both on the last work program and the new work program, we can do that. But I'm gonna pass it over to Lorraine, and she'll talk a little bit. She'll address the next couple of slides.
Good evening, thank you, Karen. So our outreach efforts, to start off, we began in October of this past year, 2020, and we have this ongoing list of contacts that has grown, that's been modified, and that will be continued to be modified throughout our ongoing projects, our work program projects. The contacts on this list include community planning organizations, county departments, agencies, cities, and other interested parties. In total, we had 103 parties that we submitted notification of our work program and solicit their input so that we can roll this into our next project, our work program project. In October, Karen had gone before the community leaders meeting and did a presentation as to where we've been in our past work program, what is our upcoming work program, and why we want their input so that we can move forward with it. The deadline for their submittals was December 17th. We still get some ongoing submittals, as we noticed today, with Karen had mentioned earlier, and was presented by one of our participants in the audience. And if you can recall, back in January of this year, on January 11th, we went before you, the Planning Commission, and we provided the overview of the previous work program, where we are, and Karen just provided an additional update on that. And then also, what is the input we received from our outreach efforts, and what did the Planning Commission have as priorities? Where did you want us to focus? Thereafter, we went before the Board of County Commissioners on February 9th. And during this session, we again brought before them the Planning Commission's comments, as well as the input we received. We provided the overview again on the work program, and we discussed what are the Board of County Commissioners' priorities. So the input that we collected to date, well, save the one that we just added today, is that we had about 16 individuals, organizations, agencies, community planning organizations, county departments, and city jurisdictions. They provided us about 16 tangible submittals that we received. And those submittals were organized into 35 potential projects as listed in your packet under attachment B. And of the number of input that we received, there was 12 of the input that we deemed not compatible with our work program, only to the effect that they were more compatible with capital improvement projects and such. So those we directed over, as we always tell our participants when they provide input, is that if your proposal doesn't fit within our work program, we will direct it to the appropriate department or agency in order to continue on with that. So they're not lost. They're actually redirected in the appropriate location. So out of the Planning Commission meeting that was done on January 11th, we had three main bullets that we received from you. One, the historic overlay designations. You wanted us to look at those a little further. Also to understand what projects have the most impacts associated with economic development, job markets, et cetera. The third bullet was the need to review the natural resource items, which include required work related to the biological opinions on floodplain impacts. So those are the key points that we received, or highlights, I should say, from the Planning Commission. From the Board of County Commissioner, the five highlights that we received from them is that they were in potentially in support of the Lake Oswego Lush Reforms Master Plan Project, with the notation that the city staff from Lake Oswego would participate and be available to assist county staff in pursuing this project. Second bullet would be, or highlight, would be still move forward with the minor and time-sensitive amendment packages. This is very important to the board, and they wanted us to continue with that task and that direction. Third bullet, or highlight, is keep a focus on housing strategies in the housing market, but also have an equitable focus on job creation. Jobs are important in the county and they're very essential, and they wanted us to take note of that and keep that in mind as we move forward with the proposals. Fourth is time is needed for the climate action plan to be completed. And the Board of County Commissioners also wanted better understanding related to the natural resources before moving forward with those projects within that category. Last bullet point or highlight is that there is an interest in long-term vision for the county. And this could be a gathering of various project topics and put them together, but also has some very tangible, measurable outcomes associated with these projects, and make sure that those are embedded and making sure that we have something that we can work with. Next slide. Okay, so the next slides will be Karen, and Karen will address, in addition to the Planning Commission and Board of County Commissioners' priorities, what are those other elements that help guide staff in bringing recommendations forward? Karen?
Right. So this is where the fun begins. This is where we start to come up with a recommendation. So we got all of the input. And as you could see from your table, it was quite a bit of input. There's lots of different ideas. But we really have to balance that with staff availability. And, you know, this is probably very common to you. But just so folks understand, we basically have about 2 full-time equivalent staff time to be able to work on the land use long-range projects. And really how that's distributed, it's about a half-time across, there's about four people who have about half of their time spent on long-range planning projects doing land use side. And then on the transportation side, it's pretty similar. There's about 2 FTE, but that 2 FTE is spread across 3 transportation planners. So the transportation planners are doing a little bit more on the long-range planning side when you look at their full workload. It's kind of an idea, give you an idea of what that's like. So another thing we took into consideration were those current projects that would continue on to the next work program cycle. And on the work program, you will notice that there were a couple of projects that I had mentioned, such as the transportation projects, that where consultants have been hired, and we're recommending those move on to the next work program, as well as the housing strategies project. That's a project underway and still would continue on. Grant funding and whether or not we had funding for our project, that was something that we also took into consideration. We can talk about that as we get into the details of the proposal. And then finally, the annual minor and time-sensitive zoning code revisions. That's something that we have implemented in the last work program and really, I think, was quite successful. We were able to group together those minor amendments and things that were very time-sensitive that we had been directed by other organizations to do, and then be able to package those all together and bring them to you pretty much on an annual basis. So we're moving forward with those recommendations. So with that, here is just a really quick graphic. I don't expect you to be able to, you know, focus too deeply on the screen, but you should have the full sheet in your packet. I know it's also accessible on the website, on the Planning Commission website. But I did want to kind of briefly go through the different projects, and I think my next two slides kind of are able to look at them more closely. But as you can see, I'll just touch on this. On this, you can see there's a variety of different topics that we address. We also, in the red, so the red ink here, print, really gives you that relationship back to attachment B, which is the input spreadsheet. So the different input numbers we're trying to associate with that which we have recommended. So that's why there's the red text on there. Let's see. So as a part of the recommendation then, on the first, on the top part, that part of the staff recommendation is to complete the projects that are underway. So to move forward and continue with the housing strategies project, as I noted, over the past, I guess it's, we really started the housing strategies project halfway through the last program cycle. So over the past year, we've been working on this. It's got three phases to it. And we're working on completing up the first phase, but over into the next program cycle, we'll need to be working on the second phase and potentially even the third phase. So we're recommending that be included. You can kind of see the details of the different phases there. Let's see. And then we're also recommending continuing with the Damascus Area Transportation Needs Project, as well as the ARNT Road Goal Exception. We've added in full, as we've looked at this particular project, there's a series of different improvements that might be needed in that area. And we want to be able to make sure we're looking at them in relationship to each other. One of the projects that emerged from, I'm not sure how familiar you are, but there's the Community Road Fund, which implements the vehicle registration fee. And one of the projects that emerged that needed a little more planning work was the intersection of 99E and Barlow Road. And so we're partnering those two projects together to be able to look at the solutions in that whole area. And then also part of the staff recommendation, which is T3, the Bike Walk Clackamas Plan, is to include projects where outside funding has been secured. We have received funding through the TGM program to be able to update our pedestrian and bicycle plans. So both of those plans were originally adopted in 1996. There was a review and update that occurred back in 2004, but it's been quite a bit of time since those plans have been updated. So we were able to receive TGM funds to undertake that project, and that the project currently is they're developing the scope of work, but we were awarded funds to be able to do that project. Another project hold on, I'm going to go back for a second because I want to address the two final transportation projects. The Willamette River project I touched briefly on It is an outgrowth from the Oak Grove to Lake Oswego feasibility study. So the Willamette River Crossing Project is a pedestrian and bicycle crossing project to be able to identify the appropriate corridor, but looking more broadly than just the connection between Lake Oswego and Oak Grove. And we do have funding that was secured through Metro to be able to do that project. And then finally, we wanted to get on the work program, even though we don't think that it's it won't be starting up. It wouldn't be appropriate to start up this fiscal year. But into the next fiscal year, there'll need to be a full update of the transportation system plan and the whole set of projects that are included in that transportation system plan. So those are the projects that are being recommended that are associated with housing and transportation. And then the second set of projects that are included in the recommendation, first is to be able to tackle the projects under economics. But what we need to do is think about and complete an issues paper to be able to understand what actions need to be taken, as well as take some time to identify some funding to be able to undertake an economic opportunity analysis. So that economic opportunity analysis really sets the foundation for our comprehensive plan chapter on economics. It helps guide our future decisions related to economics, but we haven't identified a funding source for it yet. So we're anticipating, and we'd like to in the near term, work with our Department of Business and Community Services to be able to see if we can find some grant funding, to be able to find a way to get that done so that we can really work on that particular section of our comprehensive plan and the ZDO amendments that are needed. So as included in that, why there are two, why it's E1 and E2, and we're calling E2 opportunity zone activation, but really that's a little bit more fluid, and some of it has to do with what kind of funding we're able to acquire. There's some different focus areas that we've talked about in the county, both in around the Clackamas Regional Center, being able to understand how we can really activate redevelopment there, or perhaps it's most appropriate kind of in the Clackamas Industrial Area Sunrise Corridor. So there's some work on really being able to refine exactly what it is. But what we heard from both the Planning Commission and the board that really looking at items that will help with the economy is an appropriate approach and really allows us to kind of give that big picture look. So another item that we're looking at, and this would probably be, as you can kind of see here, you can see it more clearly on the full spreadsheet, but is the natural resource update. And we had several suggestions. If you look at the natural, in the attachment B, there were many different suggestions related to natural resources. So we've kind of pulled out two different projects. One is to really be able to do, as we were calling, the issues paper related to that, and actually wait until the next fiscal year to start on that. Really one of the things when we were talking with the Board of County Commissioners, really being able to understand what the outcomes of one, the climate action plan are going to be, so that our sustainability office is working on a climate action plan. So really not starting our work until after that work is done. And then also being able to understand what the board priorities are related to the different items and suggestions. So really for that one, we're just kind of targeting it as an issue paper, saying, hey, we know that the board is still working on what its priorities are, but we should bring something back within the next 2 years to them. But we do understand, and NR2 is amend the flood hazard development zone overlay regulations per the biological opinion. So there are some things that are going to be required of us, and we should be setting aside some staff time to be able to look at that. So that's why that particular project is called out. We have included in the work program the Lusher Farm master plan project. This is something that the board had recommended, but really making sure that we're working in partnership with Lake Oswego and understanding their staffing capability to be able to augment that work. So that project has been included in the work program. And then finally, continuing with the time-sensitive and minor amendment package, being able to package together those small amendments that are required and little minor amendments that we can do. And then finally, we are hoping, and I think that maybe Jennifer will be able to touch on this a little bit more, but start to work on that completion of the ZDO audit. I think we're trying to work and understand how we, as we open up different sections of the code for these different projects, what are those other kind of audit projects that we can be doing and folding that into the work that we're doing. So that's a whole suite of a variety of different projects that staff is proposing as a part of the upcoming work program year. So first, these are kind of what the next steps are. I guess what's not on here, I think we have some opportunity for the Planning Commission, if you have questions about the staff recommendation, is really kind of the next piece. And then there's the public comment section, and then you will have the opportunity for both discussion and making of the recommendation. So with that, I'm going to stop my share screen, and wasn't sure if Jennifer, did you want to add anything to that?
Nope, I think you covered it. Just go with questions.
All right, sounds good.
Very good. All right, well then our first step is, are there any questions for staff from the commission? And if you, we do have hands raised. Thank you, Mary. Mary's first.
I was hoping that you could discuss the climate action plan and what the likely components of that are to be, and if there are going to be recommendations coming out of that, just so we understand why the board wants to wait for that before moving on the environmental components.
So that's, I mean, that is a wonderful question. And I won't be able to give you all of the details. The Climate Action Plan is a project that is being managed by our sustainability office. They have a consultant on board, and they're working, and I believe they have pulled together a task force or an advisory committee for their project. And they're really looking to identify actions that will help us be, is it carbon neutral by 2050? Carbon neutral by 2050. And so they will be looking at a suite of different actions. And some of those actions may be related to transportation. They may be related to different ways we use land uses. They could really cover a whole scope of different items. But they haven't had their first kind of public meeting yet on that. But I think what is important, and I think what the board really wants to make sure about, is that we allow for that process to have their conversations before we jump ahead of that.
Does that answer your question, Mary?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Tom, you have a question?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments or questions. It appears that some projects miraculously just kind of jump ahead of ones that have been on the list for many years. And having been around the Planning Commission, I've seen some of these projects and they've been on the list as long as I can remember, but they never seem to kind of move up the ladder. You know, so it seems like there's, the Solutia Farms is a good example. Where did this come from? And all of a sudden now it's a priority. Meanwhile, there's been requests from community organizations and other folks for years to address other projects. So I think it might be useful just to refresh us a little bit on how you go about prioritizing and deciding what makes the cut and what doesn't. One obvious thing that comes to mind is, it's if you can get a grant, you're going to do it. But if you can't get a grant, it gets pushed off to the side. So it seems like there may be some advice for folks who are maybe frustrated with their projects not kind of making it to the top, to help them maybe figure out how you get grants so there's a more likelihood that they can get these other projects done. But first off, just remind me of how do you decide, I get the staffing piece. You only got so many bodies and you only have so much time. But there must be some process where you kind of eliminate, well, this one has a higher priority because of this benefit or whatever. Are there criteria you use for deciding which ones make the cut or which ones don't? I just think that'd be useful just to refresh us, but also for the public in general who may be frustrated with some of the things that aren't getting addressed.
Right. So I would say that we, during the presentation tonight, I think we covered those criteria very broadly. We do not go through each project and do some sort of assigning of points to be able to understand which ones rise to the top. But I think the Lusher Farm one is a good example. So one of the things that was important, and as you addressed, was staff time and staff availability. So I know that there were concerns on our side about staff availability from county staff. And that was also a concern that the board had. The board talked about this project specifically. And really incorporating that into the work program has to do with the amount of time that the city of Lake Oswego can actually dedicate to doing the majority of the work for that project, and then being able to partner with the county on doing the kind of the legal processes of going through the planning commission and the board. And again, if I'm misstating anything, Jennifer, you can jump in. But really, we looked at that project staff time as well as board priorities. The board identified that as something that we should consider. So those were things that helped it move into the staff recommendation. And then as you said, Commissioner Peterson, there are other things that made it into the recommendation because it had grant funding, you know, that, such as the updates to our pedestrian and bicycle plan, those type of things. So we really were looking and trying to listen to both the Planning Commission and the board, as well as understanding how much staff time that we have.
I mean, just to follow up, so is it fair to say that there's some requests that are never ever going to make it just because it's low priority from the staff or board's perspective? There's no opportunities for grants, and if that's the case, should we be honest with these folks and say, no way is this going to ever happen, or do you just keep it on the list?
I don't think we know. That it's never going to happen. I mean, I certainly understand your point for sure. I think the reality is that policy priorities change, politics change, different planning commission members cycle through, different board members cycle through, different mandates come from the state, the world changes. You know, there are a lot of things that kind of influence this. And I don't think we can predict it. I also think it's fair to say that, and just to be perfectly candid, just because somebody submits a suggested project doesn't mean that it should be a county priority. And that's part of this. That's part of this discussion, right? There could be worthy things out there that we don't have the resources for, that we can't take on the administrative. You know, some of these things are ongoing programs where the county is going to have an administrative responsibility moving on for years that we might not be able to staff. So those are, you know, sometimes there's worthy things we can't afford. That's certainly part of it. And it's not just the actual adoption process. It's knowing what it means moving forward from a regulatory standpoint. So there's some things we get suggested that are very worthy. And I look at them and think, how can I staff that? And so that, you know, that is definitely part of it. And that's part of the value of these issues papers too, is that maybe it will let us take on some of these, particularly the environmental ones, open up some significant questions about technical expertise, about what it means for property rights and the county's liability there in terms of taking away development rights that, you know, we have under state law, some liability for that. So all of those things, it's very hard for us to do that analysis until we're able to dedicate some staff time and actually, you know, dive into it. And we did that with housing. I think it was helpful. And we would hope to be able to do it for these other two big categories that have been identified.
Anything else, Tom?
Well, just a comment on the sustainability goal, carbon neutral by 2050. I'll be anxious to see what comes out of that. We did a similar study at the port to try to reduce our carbon footprint to 1990 levels by 2020. Already passed, but and it was pretty interesting what came out of that study and what it was we had to do. And the biggest challenge was we had grown so much in that period of time to reduce our carbon footprint by 20% meant we had to reduce our energy consumption by over 40% to hit that goal. So I'll be anxious to see what comes out of this. That's a goal, that goal, having been through this similar exercise when I was at the port.
Thank you, Tom. Brian?
There we go. You know, to Tom's point, I was actually going to raise kind of a bigger picture issue is, you know, my recollection back at the last joint meeting of the Board of County Commissioners and the Planning Commission, we actually had a discussion around the concept of figuring out how to tie our work plan to the performance Clackamas document. And I still really think that that would be a valuable exercise, you know, because every time we go through this, we're having this debate about resource availability and kind of what projects have the most political capital at the current time, rather than having a discussion about how do these projects help us move to a broader, longer term goal in the county. And, you know, it's too late to kind of work that in now. But as we move forward, I think it would be really helpful to figure out how to categorize these projects or at least link them. I appreciate the effort to categorize them by the categories of the comprehensive plan. I think it would also be helpful to think about, so which sections of the performance Clackamas document do these fit in, so that we can have a sense of whether they're helping us move us toward an overall strategic plan in the county. So for what that's worth.
Yes, and I will tell you that the board is currently in the process of amending the performance Clackamas plan, the kind of, you know, the big picture sort of overarching goals that they set are in flux right now. And they will be adopting those, I think, very shortly, but there were still some edits going on at last time I heard about it, which was last week, I think. So there will be some changes, but the really big picture ones that I think Karen did mention, and it's in one of the attachments, Karen, the kind of, there's like five of them that are like these key principles, those aren't changing, but some of the sort of the next category down about the things that they really want to work on, some of those are changing. And so the housing one is a good example, though. They had a housing goal. They're still going to have a housing goal. It's changing some, but that was part of what led to that housing strategies project being really kind of our major land use undertaking that did have roots in performance Clackamas.
Great, thank you. Murph, did you have a question?
You know it. Well, more of a comment, maybe two. I was, after reviewing all this paperwork and going through some of the backgrounds that I have up here, there's so much change going on so rapidly that we need flexibility in this group and with the Board of County Commissioners. And if we have to jump and change to something else, with the loss of timber, that, and the flooding and the severe storms we have, we need to work on our carbon footprint severely. And we need to look at our housing and where we put, are we putting people in hazard's way with this climate change going on? And how can we protect our natural resources, such as water? I mean, that is going to become a commodity that's going to become very valuable that I can see in the near future. And I just want to make the comment that we need to focus and stay very, very flexible on this. And this type of workshop we have right now is so valuable. And I am so blessed to be with these smart people. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that.
Great. Thank you, Mer. Carrie, did you have a question?
Just some clarification. Karen, thank you for providing feedback on Mary's question, and that is, why do we have to wait? You know, is there like a interdependency between climate action plan with the natural resources that we would follow? Or is that just a matter of staff resources that are limited that would drive the planning team not be able to work on both the things at the same time? So that's one quick clarification. And then I have another question. So Karen, do you want to answer that?
So I would say it has more to do with understanding what the actions are coming out of the climate action plan. And I think it has the board has support for that project moving forward, and they don't want us to get ahead of that project.
Okay.
So while we're not certain what the outcomes of that project are, they don't want us to be making some actions that might be in conflict of that. It has more to do with that than just staffing, because that particular project is staffed by our sustainability office.
Okay, and what's the timeline for that? And how do we get involved with developing the climate action plan?
So my understanding is, so originally they had been working towards having that project underway basically this calendar year. So they had in January and February been establishing the community advisory committee / task force, not quite sure what they're calling it, but they're pulling that group of people together. And so they have yet to have their first meeting. So they're right at the beginning of the project. Due to, ice storms and different things that may have come up, it's probably taking a little bit longer than they had expected. But I would imagine we can talk to Eben and his team and Jennifer and see if there's a way that we can get an update of that project to the Planning Commission. I think it seems like that would be really appropriate, and make sure that you have that ability to tie in at those key points in time.
I would appreciate that, if it pleases the chair, we can make that request. Mm-hmm. And then the second question is, again, related to natural resources, but more closer to the man-made natural resources, and that is stormwater management in the unincorporated Washington County area. I mean, Clackamas County area. I get that most of the cities are responsible for stormwater management, and Wes is responsible for certain areas of Clackamas County and stormwater management. But what about the rural area? Is there a way that we're planning on making a master plan for how to deal with the stormwater management associated specifically with transportation, and not necessarily with the development that happens more sporadically? But I'm just curious to know if the county is going to address the stormwater management in a bigger picture sense at some point. And, I get lost in as to whose jurisdiction, which agency is responsible for those actions. So if it's not, county, who is that? And how do we make sure that those certain, best management practices that are now almost like 20th century get brought into the unincorporated Clackamas County roadways? Because as the roadways go in and out of the cities, incorporated and unincorporated, there are different standards that are being used. And I'd like to see some more uniformity and be able to count on more of the, water coming off of the roadways be treated in an appropriate way before it goes into the natural resources area.
So the county has jurisdiction outside of districts, but we don't have the standards themselves are not really in the zoning code. There is some general language in the zoning code that does cover when there's no district for development. It's relatively minimal, but there are some standards. But it is actually through our county roadway standards, and I am not an expert, but I won't even pretend that I am, but they are implementing surface water management outside districts, and Okay. And they would as well on the county's transportation network, but I don't know anything about the technical details of that. Karen may know some about that. We could certainly have somebody come and talk to you about it, but it wouldn't be something we wouldn't envision that those standards would ever be in the zoning code. They would they would reside. Doesn't mean they couldn't be changed, but they would be in this more technical roadway standards.
Yeah, I do know that we have, and our road department is involved in the MS4 permit, I believe it is. And within that, they have certain requirements that they have to demonstrate and talk about related to stormwater. And so we can, you know, loop back with information that's more specific than that about what type of things they have to address and report back as a part of that permitting process.
Okay, thanks, Karen. Mm-hmm.
I had actually a follow-up to Tom's comment about the Lucia Farm. I'm not familiar with that, like, at all. I know it's out there off of Stafford Road, I believe. But is that farm in unincorporated, or is it incorporated in Canby? I mean, excuse me, Lake Oswego? That'd be, like, my first question. Second, it would be, it's talking about a park. Why is this here and not maybe in the parks, Clackamas Parks and Recreation, you know, bucket? And yeah. And what is it? I mean, it says master plan. So it's a master plan for what? I mean, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I really, when I read it, I was like, oh, what did I miss?
I don't think you missed anything. I think, and there's a couple people here tonight in the audience from the city who I think would be happy to answer your questions and respond to this. I'll tell you what I know. You're right, new to the Planning Commission. I do think that they submitted one other time. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Scott will probably be able to correct me if I'm wrong about that, to have it added to the program. I think they asked one other time. But it isn't new to current planning. Forget about the long-range planning work program. The current planning department has been essentially trying to figure out how to deal with the Lesher Farm situation for 20 years. And so they feel a little bit like they're being passed around, because it's, well, no, we don't think that works. Maybe you should try this. Maybe you should file for a land use application. Maybe you should try to get added to their urban growth boundary. Maybe you should. And really, we just haven't found a solution for them at this point. And so this is another approach now, potentially. So the property is unincorporated Clackamas County. It is zoned EFU. It is owned by the city of Lake Oswego. And it is currently operated as a park. So it's an odd situation in that it's in our jurisdiction for land use, but the city owns it and operates it. And they have some interest in doing more there than what's currently permitted. And there are some rather convoluted, for lack of a better word, limitations in state law related to establishing a park on EFU land. And it isn't that you can't do it. You can establish a public park, local park, but in order to be able to do anything on a park in EFU that isn't a farm or forest use, and there actually are some farm uses, it really was a farm, Lesher Farm. So to the extent that they're operating, say, a community garden or, you know, doing things that are really agriculture related, they can do those things. But when you wanna do other more, I guess I would call them traditional type park uses, you're very limited under the statute unless the local government adopts a local park master plan into its comprehensive plan. And so it sets up this kind of strange situation where the city can't do that because the property is not in their jurisdiction. They've recently attempted to have it added to the urban growth boundary, and Metro's preliminary staff report was not favorable. And so that process is on hold right now. Now we're considering this as an option. So it is odd. You're not wrong to kind of think, oh, this seems a little bit strange. And that's why it really would be a partnership between our staff and their staff. And so that we would be hopefully not expending a lot of staff resources, but we would find a solution for them.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. No idea. That's too city for me. Brian, you had a question.
Yeah, I may be totally off on this, and I may be remembering another project, but I have this recollection that there was some sort of controversy around the Arndt Road project, and I might be confusing it with a Canby crossing. But the last time this came around, I remember Christine Drazen raising some concerns. I may be totally off. I'm wondering if anyone can refresh my memory on that or tell me I'm just totally off. Does that make any sense?
So I don't necessarily remember controversy. But I, you know, I don't necessarily remember Christine Trazen bringing something up. But I will say that there are, this has been something that's been talked about for quite some time.
Right.
We have worked with DLCD. So currently we have a goal exception to be able to extend Art Road from its intersection right now with Barlow Road, and it would go through some farmland, it would go under the railroad tracks and come out through Canby Ford. Okay. And so there are some issues with that.
Right.
And over, and that was done in 94, I think.
Right.
It was done quite a few years ago. Since then, there were conversations with the city of Canby and whatnot about the fact that a more direct access across the river, so it would require a bridge, which would be expensive, but that would allow kind of access into some of their industrial land and connect to, I believe it's Berg Parkway, to make a real more direct connection is something they wanted. And that's what the goal exception would be. It's actually an amendment to the goal exception. But with that, and so since the past 2 years, there's been staff changeover in Canby. And then there's this concept of there are also other improvements in that general area that would provide better access for Canby. And one of those is improving the intersection of 9090 and Barlow Road, right? But that too, because there are railroad tracks, that too could be a very expensive fix. So being able to look at the kind of the traffic analysis in the whole area and understanding kind of where the investment, you know, which investment could might be best to do first. So that's why there's been this minor kind of change in the way that we look at that project.
And so it's basically still in that study phase,
yes.
Right? Which is, I think, now it's coming back to me a little bit. I think that's where we all got to, that we were comfortable. You know, I think there were concerns where with the proposal was originally raised in 1994, whether it was still current and needed, and there seemed to be some political kind of push behind it. And we got to the point where if we're really just talking about trying to find the best solution, people were comfortable with that. So that was helpful. Thank you.
Murph, a question?
Yes, I just wanted to expand a little bit on what Brian brought up. Wasn't that something we worked on recently with the Canby mine application? Didn't they have a study of that particular area on traffic that they had to submit and brought forward to us?
At Barlow, I think.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, that was something we had looked at. Yeah, because that all kind of comes back to me now that, yeah, we had looked at that area pretty extensively, I thought. I'll just leave it at that.
Great. All right. I'm not seeing any other hands up, so not a last chance for questions from the commission, but we can move along and invite our guest to speak in just a moment. First, have we received any correspondence on this matter other than those items included in the meeting packet?
So we have received, and I, Bruce Parker, who spoke earlier, he did email his recommendation. And I don't know, Darcy, if I think you were included on that email. It came in today, like mid-afternoon.
Right, but that would have been sent to the Planning Commission from you.
Okay. So I did not forward that to you today.
Is that something that we could forward and, you know, like by tomorrow afternoon, if somebody had a concern or question, they could.
And I definitely can. And Bruce read exactly what he sent.
Oh, okay.
So he read it to you.
That was very good. All right. Well, then we probably don't need that forwarded because pretty sure.
Yeah. So we can go ahead.
Okay. Very good. All right.
Lorraine, was there anything else that we had received? I'm just checking in with Lorraine. Muted.
Still muted.
Yeah, I thought I hit that button. There was one email I received this afternoon, but I was a little confused by it. The individual was referring to Hillsborough, City of Hillsborough, homelessness and having medical facilities, et cetera, for the homeless population. I'm in question about that one, if it's appropriate for our work program. And I had an email back to her to ask for clarification. So I'm still waiting to hear.
Okay.
And that was it that I know of. Yes.
I think we've satisfied that. So now we'll be moving into public comment. Are there any representatives of community planning organizations or hamlets here to speak? Each organization will have at least 10 minutes to testify. So if you are representing a hamlet or CPO, please raise your hand from the audience at this time.
And I have three hands up. First up, I have Karen Bjorklund. And then after that is Valerie Chapman and then Suzanne Wolf.
Great. Well, let's bring Karen on then. That'd be great. Hey, Karen.
Hi there, Tammy.
good to have you with us. Would you like to make some comments to the commission?
I would. This is Karen Bjorklund. I'm here tonight on behalf of the CPO Summit, which represents a bunch of different CPOs and hamlets. The CPO Summit was created, for those of you who may not know, by community planning organization leaders as an independent forum to talk to each other, to discuss issues they have in common and work out joint plans to help address those issues. The CPO Summit members collectively made two requests for the long range work program this year under input one and exhibit three in your packet, which are split among, I noticed, different attachments. And I want to talk about one of them in particular. This starts with a good news, bad news scenario. The good news is, and for CPOs, is the zoning ordinance allows CPOs to appeal a staff decision and a type 2 land use application without having to pay the appeal fee, which we really appreciate because that fee right now is about $250. The bad news is that the zoning ordinance only gives 12 days for CPOs volunteer to do five things. One, get and understand the staff decision. Two, set up a public meeting with proper legal notice. Three is have the public meeting and make a decision. Four is write an appeal explanation if they're going to appeal it. And five is get it to the county. 12 days to do all that in their volunteer spare time, which you can probably understand, after job and family responsibilities and all the other necessities in their lives. And that's a problem that has stopped some CPOs from being able to carry through with an appeal. Unfortunately, it undermines the intent of waiving the fee for CPOs, and it also impairs the ability of a CPO to help the county in carrying out State Goal 1 on public involvement, which, as you know, is one of the purposes of the CPO program. This issue doesn't come up with every staff decision. CPO Summit members have said their CPOs are not interested in appealing the great majority of staff decisions. They agree, they say, or accept most decisions. So there's no need to make the appeal period longer for all type 2 decisions. But from time to time, there are decisions that communities ask their CPOs to appeal. And when the need to appeal comes up and there's not enough time for the CPO volunteers to take the necessary steps, it can be a big issue for the community, which unfortunately can become an equity or you might say an inequity issue because only those who have the money can carry through with the appeal on their own. CPO Summit members recognize that there might be a number of ways to address this 12-day appeal period. That's why in our proposal document, if you've read it, gives the issues and then a couple of possible solutions without giving a specific way that the problems need to be addressed. And we continue to ask to be able to work with county staff on solutions to this so the public in our communities can fully and equitably participate in the land use planning process. and we thank you for your consideration.
Karen, at this point, with this testimony, and I guess my first question was this submitted in time to be added to the list of activities?
We were input number one.
Okay.
So we might have actually been first.
Not surprised, Karen. Okay. And then how do we go to the next step on this?
Right now, the way that I understand it, the staff recommendations have been set up very differently this year than prior years, but it looks like that input one is not on their recommended list. And there could be ways in which the ZDOs don't have to be changed. We don't know that, or to change the ZDOs. Maybe there are some ways to deal with this. And what the CPOs that are having issues with this really wanted to get to was, is there some way to work this out? Is it a ZDO change? Is it some other change? How can we make it happen so that CPOs can make use of that ability to appeal for free and serve their communities so that those communities and those individuals don't have to come up with the $250?
And I understand we have so many days from the moment a land use application is received, and is that not dictated by the state of Oregon?
The overall is the 12 day, as far as I can understand, and Jennifer will correct me, I'm sure, if I'm wrong, that the 12 days is not specifically spelled out in statute. It says minimum of 12 days, doesn't actually say exactly 12 days, but the ZDO has been written in such a way that it's limiting it at 12 days instead of making it a minimum. There are other passages, other language in the ZDO that gives minimum times for things. So this is actually a little bit unusual in that most of the other things in the zoning ordinance don't give that hard and fast deadline in the same way that this one does.
Jennifer.
You are correct, Chair Stevens, that state law does establish a maximum time period in which we must make a final local decision. So in the urban growth boundary, that's 120 days. In rural areas, it's 150 days from the date the application is deemed complete. And for most applications, that's not a problem at all. But when there is an appeal, those are the circumstances where we generally do run up, not every time, but if we're going to run up against the clock, that's often when it happens, because we've already gone through a staff decision, then it's been appealed, then there's a hearing. All of those steps just lengthen that time out. It can be very challenging to meet the 120 days when there's an appeal. And so that is my hesitation to just jump on board with changing this. I will tell you, Karen is correct. The 12 days is a minimum. We could provide a longer appeal period. It used to be 10 days, and the state changed the law some years ago to 12, and we amended our code accordingly. I think we do need to provide applicants with the certainty of knowing, at what point their application is truly, their decision is final. So we would be setting a finite appeal period, I think, is appropriate. It's 12 days, it's 15 days, it's, whatever, so that they know it's done at this point and I have a decision. Lengthening it, if the Planning Commission was interested in this type of amendment, it would be part of the minor amendments package. That's what I would recommend that you would recommend to the board, that it be included. I do have some concerns about timelines, and it's a few days here and a few days there and a few days here, and pretty soon we can't meet our timeline, and that, we have to meet our timeline. So if it went from 12 to 15, that probably wouldn't be a deal breaker. I think the proposal though was maybe like 35 or something, on where they would signal an intent to appeal. And then if they really did appeal, they would have 35 days to do that. And that's not a workable timeframe. We cannot go that long. We won't be able to hit our deadline. So it would have to be something less than that. And I would prefer, from an administrative standpoint, I think it's too easy to make mistakes if it's sometimes this many days and sometimes that many days, I think it works better for our staff, just because we're processing hundreds of applications a year, that it be, you know, whatever it is, be set. But that doesn't mean we can't explore it or discuss it with the CPO summit or come back and talk to you about it as part of the minor amendments.
And I know in our CPO, when we, and we haven't done many appeals, but when we have done them and we knew we were going to come right up against that deadline, we've literally called the planner and gotten them on the phone and said, what can you do for us? And then we've been several times allotted extra days. Yeah, you know, if you can do this by this. And so we've worked with them. We would have loved to have had a lot more time, but at least we got a little more time. And so, I mean, I don't know other CPO's experiences with that, but Karen, do you have like a recommendation that the summit is making, or you're just bringing this, what can be done?
The way that the summit members wanted to bring this forward was to give a couple of ideas for how to handle it, but not say it has to be one of these, it has to be 35, it has to be some other particular days, but they wanted to work together to find out what, because we understood that this would be tough in some situations. So we wanted to come up with something that was going to work for long term. So it wasn't a specific proposal. It was more outlining the problem and saying, help, what can we do? Now, Tammy, you were describing being able to call the planner and ask for extra time. And I'm pretty sure that was probably relating to when you were going to get comments back on a land use application, because there's a minimum time. And Jennifer has talked to many CPOs over time needing a little bit of extra help, and the staff goes the extra mile to do that when they can. This appeal period is one of the only things in the zoning ordinance that has a drop dead date of 12 days. So the planners would tell you if you ask them, no, we can't give you any more on the appeal period, because that's what our zoning ordinance says.
That's accurate. We can't legally extend the 12 days under the code. They certainly can supplement. For instance, they don't, you know, an appellant doesn't have to submit everything related to their appeal within the 12 days. They can add additional information and, you know, all the way up until the record closes. But the actual, I'm going to appeal this, here's the $250, or in the case of a CPO, the vote that shows that they're, you know, that has to be done within the 12 days. It is extended for weekends, you know, goes to the next working day. If it falls on a weekend, it would go to the next working day, but otherwise it's 12 days.
Okay, Karen, did you want to bring up your second topic?
I mostly wanted, that was the most important of the two. So that's the one we'd really like to be able to work with staff on to find some solution.
Okay. All right. And at this point, all we can do is ask staff to, you know, put on their thinking caps and see what maybe could be done.
Can I ask a quick question on that? So it sounded like the requirement from the CPO is an actual vote of the CPO in order to trigger that. And that seems to be the biggest issue, that the ability to schedule a CPO meeting in that time. Is that accurate? And I wonder whether another way to do that, instead of changing the time, is to somehow allow a CPO's executive committee to trigger that versus the entire CPO. I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head, but I'll throw that out there. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but it seems the other way to instead of, you know, changing the deadline, maybe we can loosen the procedure to allow the CPO to work more quickly. I don't know.
Jennifer probably will address this, but let me, because we've talked about this as a some kind of approach. The zoning ordinance does require, and Brian, you probably know this because this is why you're bringing it up, that the zoning ordinance does require that in order to get the waiver on the appeal fee, that CPOs must meet in a public meeting, and there are certain requirements for how CPOs meet in a public meeting, proper notice, right, and all that. So I think Jennifer might have an opinion, and maybe even county council would have to have an opinion on whether it could be done differently, like in an executive, not all CPOs have executive groups. Whenever they meet and make decisions, they are supposed to be in public meeting. So Jennifer or maybe Stephen Madcourt County Council could perhaps address that.
Yeah, that's something that could be explored if the, because what I'm hearing Karen say is there's, you know, that there's a $250 appeal fee, and I understand that that's a barrier for filing appeals. And so that's the reason that the CPOs are, you know, there's this special provision where they don't have to pay the $250. And she's right. They have to make that decision at a public meeting. And I suspect there's, you know, a reason why it's like that, but it's been that way for years. And I certainly haven't asked the question in recent memory. So that's something we could certainly discuss about whether there's a shortcut way basically for them to authorize the appeal so they can get the paperwork filed within the 12 days and still qualify for the fee waiver.
Perhaps that's something, Jennifer, maybe you want to identify someone who, we could either go ahead and try to see if we can have some conversations, or if you feel you need to get a commitment from the Planning Commission and the BCC to put some time into this, you can address that.
I mean, I think it's appropriate for, if the Planning Commission thinks that the board should prioritize this proposal, then I think it's appropriate for you. You can, you know, add that to your recommendation. I think 2 years ago that happened where there were certain minor amendments that got, some that may have been added by you and some maybe by the board, but we ended up with three or four things that were particularly called out to consider as part of minor amendments. And I think it's appropriate for you to do that. If you didn't, it's not like it would prevent us from pursuing it, because I can initiate an amendment if I, you know, as part of one of those minor packages. But I think if it's a priority for you, the board should hear that. So.
Merv.
Quick question. Is it the same for hamlets and villages?
Well, some hamlets act as a CPO and some do not. Beaver Creek is both a CPO and hamlet, where Stafford is separate. And so it's really the CPO board, which can be the same or a different board.
Okay, same rules.
Yep.
Okay.
CPO.
You have to be the CPO. Right. Yep.
Carrie.
So are we making a decision now on this issue, or are we just asking questions? Because I have some opinions, but it's not necessarily a question. Karen, I just saw Jen.
I would say I think you should just continue to take public comment. You don't need to deliberate or make your recommendation until we get through all the comments.
Okay, great, great. All right, Karen, are you done?
That's all I wanted to talk about this evening. So thank you for that time and your consideration, your questions, and your ideas.
Thank you very, very much, Karen. So it's 8:00. Could we all take a 5-minute break? I know that people are like in the wings waiting, but we need a break. So 5 minutes, we'll be back at 8:03.
So if I could.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
We are recording again, so we are live.
Great.
Next up, I have Valerie Chapman.
Great. Welcome, Valerie, if you want to unmute, and eager to hear your comments.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you for having me here tonight. I am here representing the Oak Grove Community Council, which is the CPO in our area. And I ask your forgiveness in advance. I'm here in place of Joseph Edge, who can speak ZDOs and codes in his sleep, but he is attending to a very urgent family situation. So I am here in his place. And so I'm reading from his notes, and I will do my best at this. We sent a letter in, I think it was probably 4 or 5 pages long, that was very detailed, and I know that it was with your packet. We wanted to point out a couple of things. We had a request to define artisan manufacturing. During the public process for ZDO 276, which included permitting manufacturing of food and beverage products, in commercial districts. That question was raised whether light manufacturing of certain types of non-food beverage products might also be compatible in these districts. So there's a request to define artisan manufacturing in the code so that it can be used to constrain the types and manner of manufacturing and guarantee compatibility with a neighborhood scale mixed use commercial that was the intention of, we think, of artisan manufacturing. So that's the first point that I'm bringing up on behalf of Oak Grove. The second request has to do, again, with receiving input from CPOs for pre-application conferences. So I'm just going to read this so it makes sense to me, as it hopefully makes sense to you. We request that CPOs be issued an email request for response for pre-application conferences in their boundaries, and that the CPO's response be included in the pre-application conference notes provided to applicants, as are other county, regional, and state agencies. The notifications that allow CPOs to submit comments expressing their hopes and concerns about specific sites or proposals before the development review process begins. Once submitted for development review, most projects are too far along to be significantly influenced by any feedback from the committee, from the community. So that is the request that that might perhaps be part of the minor and time sensitive amendments, as would be the artisan manufacturing. So those were more simple requests there. Just to note that we really support prioritizing the Oregon Land Use Planning Goal 5, the work in including natural resources and conservation area projects, and including the study of historic resources protections. So it's many things in the letter will refer to environmental concerns that reflect concerns of this CPO. We also believe that the McLaughlin Area Plan projects, including additional node planning for key intersections south of Park Avenue, which has been in planning process, should begin seeking grants or other funding opportunities sooner rather than later, so that we can ensure that we can continue delivering map elements that cannot be achieved without urban renewal funds. So that was highlighting there. And then the last thing we'd just like to bring up, just to pay attention to, is that the public art process. We have the experience in Oak Grove of the challenges when we a mural was required as a use condition for approval. But because there was no standard in the ZDO, it was left up to the selection of an artist. They was left up to the applicant, and the hearings officer required that the mural would be installed on the wrong wall. So without some standards in there, the art project can't go forward as we envision. So that's the things that I wanted to bring up to your attention tonight, but there are more details in the letter that we sent.
Very good. Does anyone have any questions for Valerie? I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong thing. Whoops. There we go. Mary, sorry.
Thank you. So Valerie, I understand you're standing in tonight, but I'm going to ask a technical question and you can just let me know however much you know. For the recommendation about additional protections for historic overlay districts, it sounds like there might have been a very specific situation with a land division where a significant or contributing accessory structure was divided off from the primary historic structure and lost protections. Do you know of a specific instance where that happened that triggered this request?
I believe that it had to do with solar panels on that building, but I can't right now. I'm sorry. I'm not going to recall anything else other than that.
Okay. And then I just wanted to say that for the artisan manufacturing, maybe staff can give us some more background, but I do remember that this came up when we were talking about the ZDO changes to allow the food and beverage manufacturing, and that artisan manufacturing was also worthy of consideration, but we didn't have enough information to adopt that at the time. So we recommended that the CPO could come back and ask for that again with the next work plan. So I think that's what's happening now.
I think that's correct.
Thank you, Mary. I did have one question because I'm not sure that I am clear, Valerie. And again, I know you're standing in, but on the pre-application, and it's my understanding that you can request, or sometimes it's required, to have a pre-application meeting prior to the application being deemed complete before it goes to a CPO. And I'm not seeing Jennifer's head nod or shake. So is that correct so far? Okay, great. So I can't visualize, because I have gone through a pre-application process, and what I had in my hands when I went through it, I would not want to be handing over to a CPO because it was so disheveled and not complete and not in order. How do you visualize, or can you give me an example of how that would happen, where a CPO would get something at the pre-application, when a lot of times that meeting is all about what you do have to do and what you have to provide and how it has to be completed and that step?
I think part of it is the expression of the community has concerns about how trees are left into our area, our hope that the natural environment, is able to flourish. And lots of times by the time that something comes, the plans are all set out. They have the lots all divided, and, it's way far along in the process. So part of it is in order to give to the applicant kind of a flavor of this area that they're moving into and kind of the hopes and desires of the community. We understand that people can do with it whatever they want with their land, but it would be nice if there was an opportunity to reflect back the kinds of things that we're concerned about and our hopes before. And, there's always the hope that, that it could be planned a little differently if they had some idea about it ahead of time. So
maybe not so much sending all the material, but being invited as a participant. Is that the vision?
I would think that would fit more and okay. So that they, because other regional agencies, they send their comments back, but the applicant doesn't see what the CPO is interested in until it's way down the line.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, that I could visualize as CPO, this is going to pre-app, and if you have comments or questions, then be in attendance. Okay, interesting. Thank you, Valerie, very much for those comments. Anyone else? Oh, I am sorry. Mary, your hand's up again.
Just wanted to ask Jennifer, are there any requirements for applicants to reach out to CPOs and adjacent properties at all?
We don't have a neighborhood meeting requirement. I know some local governments do. We do not. My comment on this one, I think in the spreadsheet, is that there's no, what they're asking for, I'm not saying they would object to being invited to the pre-app, as Tammy suggests. I do have some concerns about that. There's always this balance between giving an applicant the best advice and having them float ideas and really problem solve with staff versus turning it into essentially a public meeting, which pre-apps are not currently a public meeting. And it isn't that it's secret. I mean, everything's posted. You can get, the files are public, the notices, they can see the application that's filed. They can see the notes that staff produces. We're not hiding any of that, but the meeting itself has not been a public meeting historically. What the specific ask is here is that we notify them of pre-application conferences like we do other agencies, and then have them provide comments if they wish that we would then pass on to the applicant. That does not take a zoning code amendment. We can just do that as an administrative change. And we're currently going through what we're calling our pre-app refresh, which is sort of looking at that process from beginning to end in terms of like the application form and the comment template and how we notify agencies and what the comment deadlines are, and all that stuff is being looked at right now. I actually think it'll probably be wrapping up here in the next month or so. I'm not opposed to adding the CPOs to just, you know, essentially they would just get an email that would tell them, hey, this has been filed, submit your comments by a certain date. I do need to circle back with my staff though, because it is an extra step. It is a little bit different because like when we invite county departments, like the traffic engineer comes to the meeting. And I think we really would be talking about just soliciting comments in this case. But anyway, the bottom line is we don't have to do a ZDO amendment. It's just a procedural thing.
Interesting. Thank you, Jennifer. That's really helpful. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Valerie? Very good. Tammy, thank you. Oh,
Tammy, it's not a question. Joseph has been a welcome and helpful participant in our planning commissions over the years. And Valerie, if you could just convey our best wishes, I hope his family as well. So
thank you. Yes, I will.
Very nice. Thank you, Brian. All right. Thanks again, Valerie. And our next speaker, Darcy.
Our next speaker is Suzanne Wolf.
Hi, Suzanne. Welcome back.
Yes, very good. Hopefully I'm chiming in at the right time.
glad to have you, and we're eager to hear your comments.
Okay, thank you. Good evening to you all. I am Suzanne Wolf, and I am currently serving as president for the Oak Grove Downtown Historic, Historic Downtown Oak Grove Organization. I'm also working with Joseph Edge as well. He has made a recommendation to me that I would like to bring to the Planning Commission's attention. I simply have one question for this evening. As it was mentioned earlier by Valerie Chapman, we had submitted to the Planning Commission for the 22-23 work program a request to adopt a definition of artisan manufacturing for zones C2 and C3. And this request, I noticed, is listed under the economics project on the work program list. And based on Joseph Edge's recommendation, he is suggesting that is moved to the time-sensitive and minor amendments project, thinking that it will take less time to implement. And so I'm here just to ask the Planning Commission to consider that change on the list.
Karen, did you... have any comments or
I'll chime in.
Jennifer,
chime in because I'm not shy ever, right? yes, this could be a minor amendment. We did devote, I won't say significant, but there was a chunk of staff time spent on the first request, which was the beverage and food, you know, manufacturing. And this artisan one came about, as you rightly remembered, kind of at the last minute, and it was too late to do anything about it at that time. I don't really know how much of a commitment of additional staff time there would be on this. I mean, I think it could be a minor amendment, but again, it's going to be competing against, you know, we still have to think about how many minor amendments, right, we can put in one package. Potentially this would fit there, though, just as well as the economics package. The definition is one thing. Under our code, what it really comes down to is whether they're doing primary processing of raw materials, whatever that might mean. Because in a C3 zone, which is one of the two zones they're asking about, you can already do manufacturing of absolutely any kind. You can manufacture anything in the C3 zone. Food, beverage, artisan, automobiles, as long as you are not doing primary processing of raw materials. So you couldn't bring raw logs to the C3 zone and mill them, but you can do just about anything else. So I'm not sure that we really need this amendment in C3, but I think where it really kicks in is the C2 zone. And that's the one that's in downtown Oak Grove, where there's this desire to have potentially some additional manufacturing. And I think what this starts to open up, and we touched on it with the food and beverage manufacturing, but it's the things like, are we all of a sudden introducing odors we're concerned about? Because we don't really regulate that. It's more of a DEQ thing. Are we introducing, you know, more truck traffic? Where are they going to do their loading? What about noise? How big should this be? Does there have to be a retail component? I mean, there are a number of issues that can, you know, that can be raised. So that's just a way of saying, I think it could be a minor amendment, but it's not without some effort in terms of investment of staff time for it.
Yes. Are you able to hear me? Yes. Thank you for that. And I understand and respect what you're saying. Certainly, the concern regarding noise or odor is something that we had addressed in our definition for our artisan definition that we submitted to the Planning Commission. We had taken the Tennessee artisan definition and modified that somewhat and submitted that to you. So if you could take a look at that, that will then help, I think, with the deliberation process.
Wonderful. Suzanne, I don't see any other questions for you this evening. Thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate your comments.
Yes, you're welcome. Right. Thank you.
Uh-huh, of course. Good night.
Good evening.
You too. Darcy, do we have any other CPO or Hamlet?
Sorry, I couldn't quite get that unmute button there. I have Jane Morrison.
Great, thank you. Good evening, Jane. Welcome, and we're eager to hear your comments.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having an opportunity for comments. Just one on the topic of determining whether or not it's feasible to preserve trees. I'm so glad that it looks like this might have some traction this time. You know, having clear and objective standards is a nifty thing. And one of our members who's been had this as an issue he's been very passionate about said, if this happens, I feel I will have died and gone to heaven. So that just sort of summarizes how important we feel it is to have clear and objective standards for preserving trees. The second thing I wanted to comment on was the pre-app question, which I'm sad that the Jennings Lodge CPO didn't include that in our comments. I think it was something that if we thought about it, we would have. And in the 6 years that I've been involved in the CPO, four of which have been on the board, I have never been contacted by a member of the development community, even though on the application, it says, here is the name and address and telephone information for a CPO. Never, never, not once. And I tell you that there have been plenty of opportunities when if the applicant had just done this one little thing, it would have really made a big difference. And to give you an example of how much we want to be a part of the solution, there is a property on River Road right now that just popped up in the Oak Lodge Water Services District Development Tracker. And as far as we know, there's no application at the county for anything, but it would be a perfect opportunity to do cluster cottages. It's an old house, great character. It's Queen Anne vernacular. It should have been on the Clackamas County inventory. I'm really sad I missed it. And it's also got just a lot of open land. around it, large lot, would be a perfect example. I would love to have the opportunity to suggest to the applicant, this would be a great addition to the neighborhood and help us solve the housing crisis. But if we don't know that things are coming down the line, we can't be part of the solution. And that's what I have to say about that.
Very excellent example, Jane. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Really getting my head thinking about if we'd known ahead of time some of the things in our area as well that we could have maybe even helped versus hinder. So does anyone have any questions for Jane this evening? Super. Jane, thank you for coming on. Really appreciate it. Murph, do you have a question?
Kind of reminds me of when we were talking about our housing crisis. I think you sent out the email on mobile loaves and fishing and the villages that were created in Austin, Texas around that. Just with houseless people off the streets, give them opportunity to get back in society. Do you remember that?
I do. Your volume is, at least for me, I can't quite hear you, Murph.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Am I the only one that can't hear Murph?
No, there's some sort of interference happening.
Oh, okay. Keep adjusting that, Murph. You're just really cutting out. We can't quite hear you.
I'm trying.
There you go. That's better.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Right there.
All right. Good. The mobile loaves and fishes. Do you remember? Right.
Yes, I do. Down in Texas. Yeah.
Yes. And that was a very interesting concept that I still have play through me of taking cottage type neighborhoods. These would be temporary for houseless people to get them back in society again. I think this is something we need to seriously look at because our homeless population is going through the roof. I mean, it's just keeps increasing. And I don't think housing strategies are going to solve that immediately. We still have people outside overnight. In this terrible weather. I mean, there's no reason for it. We should be helping these people. Yeah. And I really appreciate Susanna coming in with this idea.
Yeah, Jane actually brought that to us. Okay. Yes, I agree. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, Jane. And Murph, thank you very much. Anyone else?
I missed. Jane, were you part of a CPO or a Hamlet? I missed that.
I'm part of the Jennings Lodge CPO. However, the pre-op comment was one not made by us. We made plenty of other comments.
Very good. Any other comments? All right. Jane, thank you. Really appreciate your comment this evening and joining us. And you have a good evening.
Thank you so much.
Of course. All right. I do believe, Darcy, nod your head if that's all comments from CPOs. We can move on to, does any other person wish to provide comment on the long-range planning work program? Each person will have 3 minutes to testify.
I have two hands up. First is Neil Schulman, followed by Scott Siegel.
Great. Thanks, Darcy. Welcome, Neil. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you. I assume you can hear me.
We can, yes.
Thank you. My name is Neil Schulman. I'm the executive director of the North Clackamas Watersheds Council. Our office is located on Lake Road in Milwaukee, but our areas of interest extend to all the creeks in North Clackamas County, as well as a section of the Willamette River. We're a local community-based group. And we have wanted to kind of basically echo a couple of things that have been said, but also make some other quick comments. So it is a little unclear to me whether this is something that was meant to be included in staff report item 3, project NR1. And we really urge the county in the process of moving toward the upcoming Goal 5 update. One critical piece that should be done beforehand is to update the maps that are used to administer Goal 5, especially related to stream layers. The county is largely using a Department of Forestry stream layer from 2000 to administer stream buffers and setbacks. And that is acknowledged to be missing hundreds of miles of small salmon-bearing stream. And to echo something that Murph said earlier, in the wake of the fires and really needing to know where we have water, especially where we have late season water, updating those maps is going to be critical to the county's ability to plan for climate resiliency, flood attenuation, fire resistance, especially, and obviously that's on everyone's mind now. There are more modern layers available, and there are also layers of oak woodland that are critical to providing drought-resistant and fire-resistant plant communities. That is obviously also going to be critical for the future. So I don't know if the intention was that for that to be included in the issue paper, but we asked that that be explicitly included as a task as we move toward goal 5. The second thing is to require a demonstration of alternative design techniques considered for development and natural resources overlay districts, such as HCAs and WQRAs, et cetera. Those are regulated by ZBO section 1002. Part of what the previous comments by Valerie kind of get at is a lot of times the alternative design techniques are kind of a bonus, but not required. And one of the challenges the council has had in working with developers and landowners to minimize disturbance to natural systems, is a lot of what we do propose is alternative design techniques for shrinking building footprints, stormwater buffers, et cetera. But those are really optional. They're not required. Right now, they just have to be considered, but the applicant doesn't have to demonstrate why that is not practical. And we believe that in the increasing build out of the county, that that is a critical step getting those techniques adopted. Our third request, which we believe fits under the minor categorization, is on the comprehensive plan land use map where only a wetland is present under ZDO 1011, open space is not applicable. And we are requesting that section 1011.02A be amended to include wetlands, including recharge areas, so that wetlands receive the same protection as other protected resource open space in the urban area. Obviously, wetlands play a huge role in things like flood attenuation, late season water availability, so we believe that's just an oversight. And those are our requests. Thank you.
Wonderful. Any comments, questions from commission or staff? Okay. Oh, Murph.
Again.
Get on you, Murph.
Again. Thank you, Neil, so much for coming with that. As a member also of the Watershed Council, I thank you.
Thank you.
Very helpful.
I have a clarifying question.
Please, Mary.
You spoke to the Goal 5 map and you mentioned it in the context of the issue paper. Were you specifically asking that the production of a new Goal 5 map be considered in the issue paper or be undertaken before or concurrent to the issues paper?
I don't know that we have strong feelings as long as it's undertaken before we get really into the meat of Goal 5. So it should be done prior to obviously setting the Goal 5 map and things like that.
Okay.
I don't know. I was unclear from the way that the staff report was written if that was something that was intended to kind of fall under that category of evaluating the county's current natural resource regulations. You know, that could be, that was open to interpretation in my mind, but the maps are clearly in need of an update.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Karen, you're on mute.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. I wanted to add for clarification that, yes, there were a variety of items under natural resources, and this was one of them that we would then be looking at during that issue paper to really understand, you know, what it would take to undertake it and what the staffing requirements would be. Several of the different items under natural resources could potentially have kind of implications related to staffing, and we wanted to take a close look and develop an approach. So I think one of the questions had been, would this be a part of that issue paper? And yes, looking at that item.
Karen, thank you very much. All right, I don't see any other questions or comments. Neil, thank you very, very much for your comments and for joining us this evening. Darcy.
Next up, I have Scott Siegel.
Wonderful. Welcome, Scott. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you have some questions or comments?
Thank you, Chair Stevens. Good evening. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission, Director Hughes and staff. Thank you for having us this evening. My colleague, Ivan Handerholm, who's our Parks Director, is also attending tonight. I'm the Planning and Building Services Director for Lake Oswego, and we appreciate you taking up the city's request to develop a local parks master plan for the Lusher Farm property. Lusher Farm, to answer an earlier question, the portion of the city-owned property that is at in the Stafford Basin, it's at the northeast corner of Rosemont and Stafford Roads. It is zoned, the portion that we're planning is zoned EFU. There are other properties owned by the city in the vicinity that are zoned they're a type of zoning that allows the park and recreation uses that are occurring out there. So it's an 83-acre portion of Lusher Farm. It includes the historic Lusher Homestead. It is a designated resource in Clackamas County. The uses out there are, there are community gardening plots. There is, as I said, the historic farmstead where the city has conducted educational courses and programming around the agriculture and farming history of the area. There's passive and active recreation that's occurring on and around the site. And I won't go into details. The reason that we're before you, as Director Hughes had described earlier, and as summarized in the letter from our city manager to Administrator Schmidt, I think it's Exhibit 13, are really zoning issues. There's no conflict out there, at least currently. There's no conflict in how the operations, in terms of the adjacent farm uses and other resource activities out there. But we are looking for a path for allowing both the current uses that are occurring on the farm property and those that are planned in the future. And in consultation with Director Hughes, and based on our experience over the past decade and trying to work with county staff on a solution, we believe that working jointly on a local parks master plan is really the appropriate option at this point. It's premature, at least in Metro's mind, to bring the site into the urban growth boundary. We do have an application that is before Metro currently. The city's position is that there is a pathway under Metro rules for expanding the urban growth boundary. It's called a major amendment for public facilities such as this. And the County Board of Commissioners supported our request, although the feedback we're receiving from Metro is that it may be premature to do this. I think they're really interested in seeing that come into the urban growth boundary with a more comprehensive plan that includes housing out in the Stafford Basin. Unfortunately, as you well know, there's some infrastructure issues that really preclude that from happening now, although we are working cooperatively with our neighboring cities of Tualatin and West Lynn, as well as the county, to try to resolve that. So the local parks master plan would provide a clear path for these uses to continue to coexist in the unincorporated area. And perhaps most importantly, we are committed, our city's committed to working on this with county staff. We have city council direction. It is a priority for us. We've prioritized the work in our work program and would be willing to do the due diligence, the community outreach, and the public hearings process with your commission and the Board of County Commissioners when that time comes. So that concludes what I had to say. If you have any questions at all about the farm or current uses and operations out there, Mr. Anderholm, I'm sure would be happy to answer your questions. And I'm also glad to answer your questions as well. Thank you.
I believe Mary has a question.
See if there's actually a question in my statement. I think there is. So when I was on the Historic Review Board, I actually reviewed some window repairs on the designated property, the designated farmstead house on Lesher Farm. So I was able to actually visit it, and it's a wonderful place. And just from what I recall, I really don't see any land use conflicts with those uses continuing. But I guess my question really is, if this turns into a park, is that going to change any of the historic protections on that designated property?
Thank you, Commissioner Phillips. That's an excellent question. And the master plan that the city has developed for the property, it's a proprietary plan. It's not a land use document. However, we think that that would provide a good basis for the type of local parks plan that we're considering here. That plan does specifically delineate an historic homestead portion of the property and intends to protect that resource going forward. So any future development or expansion of the trail system up there, expansion of the community gardening plots, and other future, you know, active and passive recreation would be not in conflict with the historic homestead portion of the property. That would be protected.
Okay, that sounds like that's your intent to protect it. I guess for county staff, does doing the park master plan for the property somehow change the fact that it's designated as a Clackamas County landmark, so it's protected under the Clackamas County Historic Preservation Code? Does that affect anything by changing it to a park's use?
No, it would not change it. This would end up being I need to think about this more because, again, part of this project is going to be figuring this all out if this ends up being on the work program. But the master plan is like step one. So in order for them to be able to do a number of the park uses that are theoretically allowed in EFU, we would need to adopt the master plan first. Then there's actual land use review of anything they actually propose to do on the site. And so at part of that, I actually hadn't really looked to see that it was a historic landmark. So that's another layer of that. And so they're just going to have, they would have to navigate that system as you've dealt with before, Mary, when people are proposing to do things. But it would depend, I think, on what they were proposing and was it affecting the part that's designated historic and et cetera.
Yeah.
But no, the HL would not go away just by adopting the master plan.
Yeah. I was just going to add that the programming for the farm, for the farmstead, and for the property is really intended to capitalize on the historic value of the site, as well as the agricultural history. Urban agriculture is about preservation and it's about education, so that bringing people out to the property so that they can appreciate what's there and learn about the history and the heritage of farming in that part of the Stafford Basin. So we really see it as central to our existing master plan and then the local county master plan that would be developed for this process. Thank you.
Great. I'm happy to hear that that's important to you too.
Any other comments or questions for Scott? Okay. Scott, thank you. Oh, Tom.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the unique situation with this piece of property and your comment about Metro's interest. Does it really make sense in the long run for this just to be designated as a park and not worry about whether it gets incorporated in the urban growth boundary? Because the purpose of the urban growth boundary is for development, not parks necessarily. So it seems like this might be a better long-term solution than trying to rely on Metro, and which has a different set of goals right now than for including property like this into the urban growth boundaries. So the more I listen to it, the more it makes sense to me to approach it this way. So just my two cents.
Any other comments? Very good. Scott, thank you very much.
Sorry, can I interrupt? I'm just wondering if maybe, since we're going to bring Mr. Anderholm over next, and he's also with the city, maybe we should just leave Scott in the room in case they want to field questions one or the other.
Oh, wonderful. Great. Yes, that'd be great. Darcy, you want to?
Yep, I can bring him over now.
Thank you.
Good evening, Ivan.
Good evening, Chair Stevens. Can you all hear me well?
We can very well.
Yes. Thank you. Ivan Anderholm, the Parks and Recreation Director for the City of Lake Oswego. Mm-hmm. Scott did a really good job of the background on what's going on in Lusher Farm. And I want to reiterate what he said is as far as the support of the city and the council making this a goal for us to try to clear up this two-decade-long issue that we've had with use out at the farm. And to go back to Commissioner Phillips' question, between the years late 2010 and 2013, the city did undergo a public engagement process that resulted in a master plan for actually a total of 152 acres that we call the Lusher Area Master Plan. The general sense from our community outreach, which include not just Lake Oswego residents, but nearly 80 of the neighbors to the property, as well as the Stafford Hamlet, and also interested parties throughout Clackamas County, was to keep the property in as a reflection of the rural nature that it's in. And I do not believe in all of the time that I've been in Lake Oswego that anybody has really faltered from that vision. And so we anticipate that the historic overlay for the core, we call it the Lusher Core, which is the old farmhouse, the bunkhouse, the historic white barn. We actually want that protected, and we want that to continue to be a historic site. And as far as the agricultural benefit of the property, you know, that's what we put out front. And that's, kind of the reason that we have a farm is for education, for production of community supported agriculture, for a place for the residents of the area to come and have a community garden plot. Secondarily is the need for what is passive and active recreation. And that's where we start to get into some conflict with AFU. And so what we're trying to do is find a path that we can allow for that. And really, when we're talking about that, it's things such as soft surface trails that are defined within the property under AFU. Those currently are not allowed unless they're part of a transportation system. So there's uses such as that. And then the other is a lot of our educational programming that we do out there, although it has an agricultural or sustainability component to it, as soon as it deviates from being agriculturally based, it becomes something that we technically cannot do. And the community has made, their vision of what the area can be, not only honoring the past, but also educating our future citizens about not only the rich history, but the value of agriculture and how it can play off of emerging urban areas. So I can answer any questions about currently what's going on or any other questions you might have, but I just wanted to add that to Scott's comments earlier.
I'll just say I appreciate the additional information, and I really support the program that you're trying to offer there. So I'm glad to hear all of that information.
Any other questions or comments for Ivan or Scott? Great. Ivan, thank you. That was really helpful. We appreciate thank both you. You and Scott's comments and makes it a much clearer picture for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your time. We appreciate, we really do appreciate how much work you have and what you're trying to balance.
Yeah.
So all success. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. All right, Darcy, are we getting...
We're getting there. You got to let me move these people around here.
Okay.
Okay. So I've got Ted Labby.
Great. Good evening, Ted. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can. Thank you.
Good evening, planning commissioners. My name is Ted Labby. I'm executive director of the Urban Green Spaces Institute. I'd like to offer comments tonight, supporting those you've already heard from the Oak Grove and Jennings Lodge CPOs, as well as the North Clackamas Watershed Council. I was not able to get comments in by the deadline a few months ago. And I understand that a lot of your staff's limited time and resources over the next few years will need to go towards compliance with State House Bill 2001, middle housing compliance. But I actually believe you can accomplish that work in a way that boosts safeguards for urban tree canopy and advances our natural resources conservation goals. I do support the staff proposed fiscal year 2022-23 long-range planning work program, in particular, the Natural Resources 1 and Natural Resources 2 items on the list. I think the development of an issue paper would provide an important foundation for future need to update the natural resource chapter of the comp plan. And in line with, you know, what was said earlier by Neil, I think that as part of that natural resources program review, we would ask that you consider an update to your goal 5 stream, particularly your stream and upland wildlife habitat area maps, to incorporate more complete coverages for fish bearing streams and the new regional oak map. Require that development impacts natural resource overlay districts and their buffers complete an alternatives analysis to consider alternatives that minimize and avoid impacts to sensitive environmental resources. I believe that one of the CPOs mentioned this in their comments. Require more detailed and proactive efforts to mitigate stormwater and preserve urban tree cover as part of county building approvals. And an idea that's been on your work program for many years that I think also fits within this umbrella is to develop a county wildlife movement strategy to align natural resources protection, zoning, transportation planning, and standards to optimize future road investments to promote, particularly future road investments to promote preservation and reconnection of fragmented wildlife habitats. I was just looking at the maps as I was waiting to speak earlier, looking at the existing county stream maps and in relation to the some of the newer data layers that are available from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and Oregon Department of Forestry. And as Neil stated earlier, it's striking how many more fish streams are now mapped in the county that are not reflected on the county's stream layer. So, and I don't think this is a complex exercise. I don't think it's gonna take thousands and thousands of dollars. I'd be very pleased to work with your staff, Karen and others, on these some of these important updates to your natural resources program. So thank you for your consideration. I look forward to working with your staff on this stuff. Thanks.
Does anyone have any comments or questions for Ted this evening?
Thank you very much, Ted, for coming.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity to weigh in and talk about this stuff with you. Thanks.
Anyone else? Very good. Ted, thank you. Really appreciate your comments and insight, and I hope you do get a chance to work with the county. That would be wonderful. Okay. Darcy, how are we looking?
Okay, I think we're clear.
We're done. Wow, that's wonderful. That's awesome. Lots of input and lots of good suggestions and ideas. All right. Let's see. I believe the public comment portion of the meeting is now closed. Are there any further questions from staff, of staff from the Planning Commission? Is there, so let's start with questions and then we'll move to discussion. So does anyone have Jennifer or Lorraine or Karen questions? Okay, then let's move on to discussion or deliberation or, and just jump right in there.
I'll jump in and just say I would be remiss not to acknowledge that the Damascus Transportation Plan is at the top of that list. And I just want to say, I think that's, that community has been begging for this for a decade because of government failure. And I think it's, the time has come, and I appreciate that, that that continues to be a priority for the county.
Absolutely. Any other comments or questions? Or I mean, we're at the point of just discussion. How are we, any concerns, last minute thoughts? Oh, we have Stephen.
Yeah, it's more of a clarifying question. You know, it, the former city of Damascus, it, how do we reference it? I mean, how do, you know, is it geographic location? I mean, my in-laws live out there. And of course, you know, in 50 years, you know, I don't think we should still be calling it, you know, the former city of Damascus. How do we, as planning commissioners, reference something that, you know, could be polarizing but respectful? And I'm looking to Jennifer for or anybody's response. I mean, it's a difficult situation. You know, there's people there for a very long time.
I think you just refer to it as Damascus. It's now an unincorporated area, just like Boring or others out there.
So unincorporated.
It's just no longer a city. It's Damascus.
Yeah. It was Damascus before it was a city.
Right.
I appreciate that. My in-laws have been there since, you know, the late 60s. And so I you know, they're passionately called Damascus. So.
Right.
Good question. Thanks, Stephen. Mary, you have your hand out?
Yeah. For the feedback we're getting on how the historic overlays have been functioning, made me think about basically, there were a few updates to the state law around delisting properties on local historic inventories. And I was wondering if our ZDO has been updated to comply with that.
Our ZDO hasn't had any really significant updates to that section of the code in a long time. We've done a couple of minor, you know, a little bit of cleanup here and there. And I think we had something in there that wasn't consistent with state law that said you could do something you couldn't really do. So we repealed that. But generally, it's been pretty much the way it is now for 20 years or more. The delisting stuff that did change, we have implemented it, but just direct, you know, when it's come up directly from statute. And so no, the code doesn't talk about it.
Okay. I'm going to recommend that get on the list for the ZDO updates, the minor and time sensitive, since it is a state requirement and it would help owners understand.
Very good. That list is growing, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's like if I get 70 minor amendments, it's not minor anymore, but I hear you. My list is longer than anything you guys could come up with, so I'm not.
Very good. All right. Any other comments? You know, we're kind of in the deliberation phase before we've got Brian. And you're on mute.
Sorry about that. I just have a couple quick questions I just wanted to clarify. One is, I want to make sure I heard right from, I think, Karen, that the watershed evaluation stuff is definitely in the white paper, and we are planning to move that forward. It strikes me that that's actually a really important issue that we need to make sure that we don't lose.
So how the white paper would work,
right,
is we would look at the different items that were brought up during this process and be able to have a deeper dive on exactly what type of changes they would require and the amount of effort And then kind of align with, we would bring that issue paper. I know in the past, we brought the issue paper to the board to get then direction from the board on phasing and how to approach. I can't quite remember, Jennifer, if we brought the housing issue paper to the Planning Commission first. I think we did.
I mean, I think it's important to clarify. I mean, I think it's clear in the timeline, but within this 2-year window, we're really saying, hey, we'll do the issue paper, but we don't think we're going to have the capacity to do anything more than that in this 2-year window. So I would anticipate then that the next time we do the work program, we would hopefully be in a position to say, here's the issue paper, here's what we learned. Now let's talk about what we can actually do. And really it evaluates, like Karen said, it is staffing. It's the potential, frankly, that we're going to need to hire consultants. And some mapping may already be out there that we can borrow and all of that. But when you start talking about these kinds of environmental issues, we may not have the expertise in-house. So it's how do you afford that? It does open up. It's like analyzing the legal framework. Goal 5 is complicated. I've had my staff say similar things to what you've heard tonight, which is, hey, let's just use the most modern mapping label, layer. Well, that sounds great, but you don't just get to do that. You actually have to say, here's the actual inventory now of streams. It's not the one from 20 years ago. It's this one. And you have to go through this full goal 5 analysis. Maybe under water quality, you don't have to, but those are the complexities. We'd have to look at all of that right. And start thinking about what kind of public outreach, what kind of notification, what does that all cost? And I think the white paper is the place for that to happen, in our minds anyway. And then we can really digest, like, how do you start to bite, you may not be able to do streams and wildlife and trees and all at once.
Yeah, I get that. The challenge is there, but that also means that we're minimum 4, 5, 6 years out, and in the meantime, we're making watershed decisions on maps that are already significantly outdated, right?
If it's...
I mean, it strikes me as a real problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you. There are 2 different programs. There's the Goal 5, which is the wildlife habitat, which is married to a very specific map that was adopted on a very specific day, and we can't change that. Water quality regulations do work a little bit differently. They're not map-based, they're field-based. So in the urban area, you can potentially have restrictions based on streams that are not mapped on a particular inventory. And in the rural area, that's also theoretically the case. We just don't have as good information in the rural area as we do in the urban area. And our water quality regulations in the rural area are not nearly as clear as the ones that Metro has adopted for the Metro boundary. So it's a patchwork right now of different,
right.
different regulations.
Are you done, Brian?
Yeah, I think that answered my question.
Okay, I think up next is Mary.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on the same topic. I think pretty much everything that has been brought up under that natural resources category is really important. I think when we talked about the work plan 2 years ago, it was really important then too. And I think taking 2 years before we can even start a project to start to address any of this is a lot. And I understand we can only do so much. I just need that to be out there that this is very important and that 2 years is a long time to wait because things that aren't being protected now can be gone in 2 years.
That's my concern. We talked about this 2 years ago, right? It keeps getting put off. And that is really problematic. I think we need to find a way to solve that. At a minimum, I think the white paper needs to figure out how to expedite this conversation. Because we can't sit here and have this come up again 2 years down the road and not have been made any progress.
Yeah. So if this is the route we have to take to get there, then I think the issue paper needs to address an action plan. Like, this is a clear priority. The map is obviously something that has to happen. Here's, a plan of attack for how to do this sooner rather than later, because we've already been waiting 4 years to get to this. And then I just want to be clear that everything that we've brought up tonight under that category is going to be considered in that issues paper. So tree protection, urban tree canopy coverage, and all of the stuff brought by the Watershed Council, all of that's going to be in that issues paper, correct?
All the issues that were raised specifically will be included, yes.
Okay.
There are some things, though, that we're potentially going to have to deal with sooner because of the housing project. So it kind of gets lost in the shuffle sometimes, but it is in the table that we're not allowed to have standards for residential development that are not clear and objective. And so we currently have standards that are not clear and objective for tree protection. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, they simply can't be applied because it's not legal under state law to apply them. And so we're going to have to figure that out. And that's going to happen sooner than the 2-year window. What that ends up looking like, you know, I don't have the faintest idea at this point what a clear and objective tree protection standard looks like. I'm hoping a bunch of cities have already done that and we can borrow it. But
yeah.
You know.
Mary, did you get, are you done?
On this subject, yes. I'll raise my hand again later on the next one.
All the confidence in the world. And Terry.
So not to pile on, but I did have same comments about, and I wasn't here 2 years ago, so I guess I'll just be waiting 2 more years. But I do think that, Jennifer, one thing that you said, the regulations being patchworked, I think that's the key. It's frustrating to see the invisible lines of urban versus non-urban, district versus non-district. There ought to be some level of uniformity. I mean, county, if we're 4 years behind the curve, you know, behind the eight ball, why can we not look at other organizations that have already adopted certain levels of natural resources protection, you know, ordinances or plans in Clackamas County? I think Wes is, you know, one of the leaders in this group. And so, you know, I would encourage us to kind of steal from the best and, you know, to the extent that we have to develop new stuff, let's do that, but not necessarily feel like we have to start from ground zero on everything that we have in front of us. Cause otherwise we're never going to get there. Cause you're right. It is daunting to think that, look at this list and say that we're going to come up with, you know, implementable set of standards from even 4 years from now. So I would encourage staff to look at how to move away from patchworking, because it must be really frustrating for not only the citizens, but also the developers to be, you know, weaving through these different regulations, depending on which side of the line that you're in. So. Mm-hmm.
And just maybe to clarify, so what we do in the urban area is what Metro has directed jurisdictions to do. And we've been compliant with that for many years. So we have water quality and habitat conservation area overlays inside the Metro boundary that have applied for 12 or 15 years at this point. The mapping that we use came from Metro. They provided that to local jurisdictions. The rural mapping is older. It's when the county went through Goal 5 in the 1990s. And at that time, those maps were what existed. And the county took those state maps and adopted them. And I think what I'm hearing is that there are newer maps than the ones that we adopted back then. So, you know, could we take the urban area standards and apply them in the rural area? Potentially. But all I want to say is, as worthy as it is a huge public outreach undertaking to start talking about doing that for thousands and thousands of rural acres. And I just don't want to try to downplay the scope of a project like that. And so I'm not trying to put people off because I don't believe in the cause or anything like that. We just have a very vast geography to deal with. So there's a lot involved.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Murph.
Thank you. And I would just like to add on to all of this. Also, I've been doing this for 4 years now also, but even prior to that, trying to find a way to get protection and minimize development in high hazard zones along rivers and allow rivers to access their floodplains. Now with the new, well, I shouldn't say new, but National Marine Fisheries has a biop that FEMA has to meet, and we will have to change our development standards. And that's going to be a whole other mess on top of that. Now, how long that's going to take, God only knows. And right now, I know we have maps that have been drawn but have to be adopted for development here in the upper watershed of the Sandy River. And I don't know if that'll ever happen because of the confusion that it can cause in the litigation. If we don't see any legislated moves in the state that back local governments to protect us from litigation, we're going to have some serious issues. So we have a lot of work to do.
Thank you, Murph. Tom, I was worried you were a little quiet.
I was just waiting to hear what other people were going to say, because maybe they would touch on what I was going to say, but they didn't. So I raised my hand. My question is on a different topic. I'm thinking about what our recommendation is going to be going forward based on the plan that was proposed to us. And, you know, just thinking about all the testimony we've heard, it seemed like there's a couple of key issues that aren't necessarily specifically identified in this recommendation, but are things that we may want to act on or recommend to be addressed. And the two that kind of stood out was one, and they're not big deals, but it just seemed like we ought to at least comment on them in terms of, they're big deals in the sense that they're important, but they're not necessarily big efforts like the environmental issues are. But I still think we need to kind of touch on whether we want to make a recommendation to the board going forward. So one of them was this appeal process. Now, it sounded to me like it's more of a procedural, potentially a procedural thing. And so is it something that we need to specifically address in the plan or acknowledge that we'll look into it? Or do we need to say, yeah, we recommend you pursue this? And the second one was this artisan, which meant, you know, maybe a little more work and could be potentially absorbed in the minor and time-sensitive ZDO amendments. But I don't know what all is in that to begin with, to know how much more you can add into that going forward. So I just thought it would be worth bringing those two topics up, since they were both brought up a couple of times in the testimony, as to what the census of the group is on any recommendations going forward or any suggestions the staff have for us as well. So those are my comments.
And just to clarify, Tom, we don't have a list at the moment for the ones that we're talking about in the next 2-year work program. We're working on, you know, the one for this fiscal year, the current fiscal year that ends, right, you know, in June. So we kind of already know what will probably be in that one. But for those next two, it's placeholder because the legislature meets every year and new stuff comes out and we find problems with our code, or, you know, the hearings officer makes a decision and we say, oh, we didn't know our code said that, we need to go fix it. So it's things like that. I don't have any reason to think that we couldn't accommodate both of the two that you just mentioned. At least, okay. I mean, the first step is always just to figure out what the alternatives are and discuss that. And sometimes it doesn't move forward, but we would need to do more, you know, discussion and talk specifics before we had a proposal for you anyway. So I think you could include those on the list as things that you think should be part of it, and that's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Tom, very much. Mary?
To add on to that, I did have those two on my list as well. I'd say for me that the artisan manufacturing is a worthy cause, but might be one that's lower on the priority just because of everything else that's come up. And we have made some recent strides towards that in the recent ZDO updates. I do still, you know, strongly support that. But the other one to add was the notices of pre-application meetings to allow commenting from CPOs and Hamlets. I think that's really important, and especially if it's just procedural and we don't have to do something in the ZDO, I think we want to strongly recommend that staff do that, especially if you're looking at the pre-app process right now. That wouldn't affect too much, and it shouldn't be anything that takes away from the rest of the work program. And then I wanted to bring up the couple of historic resources related ones again. The delisting updates required by the state. If it has been that long since the Historic Resources Code has been updated. There's probably one or two other state updates. I know I just did this for Gresham's Code. So I would look into that, just make sure that the code is in compliance with the recent state updates. Don't need to do an overhaul, just make sure that it is in compliance. And then what was brought up in the public comment about land divisions potentially not protecting significant contributing outbuildings, that's worth checking on in the code, that because that would change the historic significance of a property. Those contributing outbuildings are part of the significance of the property, and if there's some way in the code that they can be divided off and not protected without going through the historic review, that needs to be fixed. So that's most likely just a check to make sure that that's how the code is written. Otherwise, that's probably a minor amendment as well.
Very good.
Okay. That's the end of my next soapbox. No promises. That's my last one.
You say. One of the comments I'd like to make is also what Karen brought up. Was, you know, if there is a way that we can also make a minor change and not say that CPOs have to come together as, you know, a community in order to vote in favor of an appeal, that actually their board can do that. You know, I know in our area in December, our community doesn't meet in December. Our board takes care of all business in December, other than receiving maybe email or telephone input from community. So If that is a possibility, I'd like to see, and that may not be a part of this, but procedural, that we could pursue, that would be important. Okay. And I think, Brian.
I was just going to pile on and all of that for the record, from Tom to Mary to Tammy. The CPO appeals process was on my list too. I totally get the challenges of extending that deadline, but I really do think there's probably some ways that we can empower that CPO board, maybe with some bumper rails to move that process forward. That's why they're elected, to act on behalf of that CPO. There's got to be some solution there that could streamline that process, because otherwise, you know, if you can't get around it, it really does defeat the whole point of that provision in the ZBO. So that's my two cents worth.
Totally agree. Carrie? You're on mute.
That button there, sorry. I'm going to offer a slightly different perspective on that. I think the whole idea of having perhaps, you know, executive board or smaller number of folks from CPO to be notified and therefore be able to streamline those process. I think that's a great idea. I would not be in favor of extending the 12-day limitation that apparently is in place now. And I'm speaking on that as an applicant. We've had projects that needed land use permits and whatnot. And some of the projects require significant time frame to run through the permitting process. And it's really, as an applicant, it is a real hardship to be able to move public works infrastructure project with such a long lead time. And then to add on more lead time to that, it is onerous. And so I'm in favor of streamlining, but I'm not particularly in favor of lengthening that process. So thank you.
Very good. Mary?
I forgot Lusher Farms on my historic preservation soapbox. I want to say that I agree that's a priority. It does seem to have just come up, but it's been an issue for 20 years, so it's not a new issue. And then I just kind of want to bring us back to the big picture and check in. I feel like what we're talking about is, in addition to the staff recommendation or slight alteration to the staff recommendation, but I haven't heard us say anything disagreeing with the staff recommendation. So I think where we're leaning is, we agree with staff's priorities, but we want to make sure that this, and this that we've been discussing are what's getting addressed and discussed as well.
And I don't see any of their hands up. So would someone like to make a motion? Oh, Murph has his hand. I see one waving. Sorry, you're on mute. There you go.
Okay. I make a motion that we accept the recommendations of the staff with a few minor adjustments.
Do we have a second?
I think we need to list what those minor adjustments are.
Parliamentary inquiry. Motion needs to be specific.
Mary?
I was going to say, I know one person here that will have that list.
I'll do my best and then add on because I haven't been writing it down.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that we're recommending that all of the natural resources issues that were discussed today get on the issues paper and stress that that's very important to include it immediate action mm-hmm. in the issues paper. We want to include the topics that came up on community noticing and participation around including the pre-application meeting notice sent to CPOs and looking at the procedure for appeals from CPOs. And under the appeals for CPOs, we want to be looking at first seeing if there's a procedural way we can facilitate that before looking into extending the timeline. I'm missing something.
Historic overlays.
Thank you. And then we want to
forget that one.
I'm going to get everyone else's first. And then we want to look at adding to the minor and time sensitive ZDO update, making sure that the historic procedures for delisting match the updated state requirements as well as any other state requirements that we need to be complying with that we haven't updated our code for, and looking at the land division process in regards to contributing outbuildings and other features that are a part of the historic significance of the primary structure.
Anyone else?
And artisan manufacturing.
And artisan. I was going to say artisan. Okay.
Yes, Commissioner Schrader just has a parliamentary inquiry because it was a motion by Murph with what I appears to me as a friendly amendment to Murph's original motion. Is that how it was offered for the record?
For the record, yes.
Very good.
I second the friendly amendment if Murph accepts it. He can accept it without a motion.
No, I do accept.
Wonderful. Stephen, thank you very much. Really appreciate that. All right. Let's any further discussion?
I'm sorry to be stickler to Robert's rules, but of order, but was there a second?
Oh, I thought yours was a second. I'm sorry, Stephen.
I apologize. I was trying to just confirm that we had it memorialized correctly because that was a complicated motion.
It was.
I do second the motion with the friendly amendments.
Thank you. I'm sorry I misunderstood. Thank you very much. All right. We have a first, an amendment, and a second that supports both, and a motion that accepts an amendment. So do we have any further discussion? All right. Darcy, would you be kind enough to take the vote?
So what we are voting on now is approval of the amended motion?
Yeah, the motion and as it is amended. Am I correct in saying it that way, Stephen?
Yes, okay. It was a friendly amendment, which Murph did accept. And so that automatically collapsed it back to the original motion, which was a hybrid between Mary and Murph.
Very good. That. Yes, thank you, Darcy. That's what we're voting on.
So both the original motion and the second, or the
friendly amendment.
Friendly amendment has been
moved and seconded.
Yes. Seconded by Stephen, correct.
Okay. Okay, Commissioner Phillips.
Yes.
Commissioner Lopes.
He's on mute.
You're on mute.
Commissioner Lopes.
Louise, you're on mute. Can we come back, Darcy?
Sure. Commissioner Murphy.
Yes.
Commissioner Pack.
Yes.
Commissioner Pasco.
Aye.
Commissioner Peterson.
Aye.
Commissioner Schroedl.
Aye.
Commissioner Stevens.
Yes, aye.
Commissioner Lopes.
Louise, you're on mute.
I think she's having some technical problems. She sent an email, which I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, but it sounds like there's some technical problems.
Okay. All right. Very good. I believe that was a unanimous vote.
We have seven.
Louise counts as an abstention?
I don't know. Yes. Oh, is it abstention? Okay, thanks.
Abstention is not a yes, so it's basically a no.
Okay. Oh, it's basically a no, Stephen?
According to, I'm not sure exactly which version of Robert's Rules of Order we're operating under, but if it's within the last three versions, a yes vote is an affirmative vote. Abstention is equal to a no.
Okay.
Because she has not voted aye.
I see. Thank you very much. Well, okay.
We have staff check the bylaws to do that for the official vote.
You just need five. You, to make an official motion, like on a land use application, you need five members of the Planning Commission to either recommend approval or denial. This isn't really quite that formal because it's not a land use application, but I would still say as long as you have five yeses, you're fine.
Okay.
And we have a quorum, and it's good.
Great. Thank you all. Always learn something. All right, I do believe we're moving on to other business, which I'm going to let Mary start off with.
So I have some sad news. I'm going to have to resign from the Planning Commission.
Oh, no.
Motion to deny.
Yeah. Not an option.
Second.
Thank you. My supervisor is leaving City of Gresham, and I've been assigned to take over the City of Gresham Planning Commission.
Oh, wow.
And that will cause way too many conflicts, so I would not be able to attend enough Clackamas County meetings to be a contributing member.
Well, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Commissioner Phillips, may I offer an appreciation?
Thank you. I'd
like to say thank you for your service to the community, and you've been a gift to the commission and the community in large. Thank you for your service.
Very much.
I'd like to add also, it's great to have a planner on the commission that knows the ins and outs as well as the staff, because it's been very helpful. And mm-hmm. We're really going to miss having someone who can formulate motions in a way that we all can agree to and understand. So I don't know who's going to fill that role, but we're going to have to find somebody. But you will
miss. I think you just volunteered yourself, Tom.
No.
Wonderful. You're going to be sorely missed, Mary.
Well, I'm going to miss all of you. It's been a pleasure to work with you and get to know you and to be able to contribute to my community. And so I'm going to miss this.
Yeah.
I would pile on to all this, but I'm still busy crying over this. You know, Mary, you saved me so many times when I was the chair. It's a huge loss to this commission, but yep. Best of luck to you. So,
congratulations,
everyone.
All right. Well, shouldn't have let off with the sad news. I guess one of my questions is there any plan for coming back in person soon, or where are our thoughts at this point?
We haven't heard anything official about a change in county operations at this
point. Okay.
There is some planning going on that nothing's been announced at this point. I think right now the focus is on if there are any public service functions that are not being performed right now because of the pandemic. It's to get those things online, and that's not us. I mean, we've been providing service from the first minute that we, you know, had the partial shutdown. So, and our lobby's open now, you know, reduced hours, but we're open. So I don't think that immediately there'll be any changes. But, you know, I would assume over as herd immunity is achieved that that things are going to change, but I just don't, I don't know at this point when.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Murph is getting used to, yeah. I think Murph is getting used to not having to make the drive.
Yeah, that's true.
As well,
I do appreciate it myself for sure. And we're actually for our area looking at how, when we go back in person, to be able to continue the Zoom because we're getting so many more participants. So
yeah,
now I hope to see the hybrid because as much as I love sitting here in sweatpants, really would love to not make that, you know, over 1 hour drive. So, okay. Is there other business before the commission?
Just the recruitment closed for the new two positions that are, you know, term expiring for Carrie and for Stephen. And now we have a partial term vacancy, unfortunately. I guess timing wise, it's good though, because we can actually use this recruitment. So if it had to happen, Mary, this was good timing.
I'll thank my supervisor for the good timing.
We've got 8 applications. We're going, I think actually tomorrow, our department director at Board Issues is going to find out which members of the board want to interview. Because, you know, for a couple of years, I think they have for a long time done some of the interviewing, but they've had a more formal policy the last couple of years that at least a couple of them have participated on the interview panel. And so probably get an answer to that hopefully tomorrow. And then typically the chair of the Planning Commission participates in those interviews as well. But we'll just see. There's going to be some discussion tomorrow at the board, and then we'll kind of go from there and try to get some time set aside. And the terms expire at the end of April. So we do actually have not a ton of time, but some time to get this done. So.
Right. Thank you, Jennifer. My agenda did not include the Planning Commission schedule. I don't know if anybody else's did. So
it didn't, because, and I noticed that too, because at the last minute I told Darcy, don't send it, it's all changing. But we didn't catch it on the agenda. So yeah, it's all in flux. I wish I could tell you I had a crystal ball as to what exactly is going to happen. But I can tell you this much. We had asked if you could meet on the 29th of March instead of the 22nd. And most of you said yes, which was very appreciated. And now we don't need it. So we will not be meeting again in March. After that, I can't tell you for sure, but I will commit to getting to you as soon as I can what's going to happen in April. There's a couple things. So there's still 3 projects that we're working on. There's the Park Avenue development and design standards that you are familiar with. We're wanting to move into the public hearing phase on that. There's housing strategies phase 1, which we're wanting to do. We're wanting to come to you for a study session and then public hearings on that. Both of those projects, the board has asked us to come back to them because we've had a change, right? We have 2 new commissioners. They don't have the same familiarity as the other 3 did. We need to get them up to speed. You know, just it's only in fairness to them to get them on the same page with everybody about what we've been doing. And then there's also been some additional outreach that a couple of the commissioners have been doing on the Park Avenue project with the business community and commercial property owners on McLaughlin. And we believe there's going to be another meeting, and we need to meet with those 2 commissioners to find out, you know, sort of what they're thinking about the format for that and when and all of that. So it's just in flux right now, and so I can't give you a set time on either of those. Glenn is working on the minor amendments package for this fiscal year. I mean, I'm guessing that by the time it's actually adopted, it'll probably slop over just a little bit into the next fiscal year. He and I are meeting tomorrow to start giving that a little more shape. So I would expect a study session on that late April or early May. So those 3 things are still in the works. And then we did get a comprehensive plan amendment and zone change application in recently. I know nothing about it. It's been assigned to Melissa Ahrens, who's come to you before. And so I don't even know if it's complete at this point, but sometime in the near future, she'll probably be looking for a planning commission date on that as well. So we will have things for you to do, but just nothing else this month.
Very good. Thank you, Jennifer. How about Board of County Commissioners?
I can't keep all the dates straight. The next thing we have, they've requested actually that we come back to them to talk about the short-term rental program that was adopted at the end of last year, because that's actually slated to go into effect, not the zoning code amendments, but the registration process that's not in the zoning code is slated to take effect on July 1st. And it would need to have a fee adopted, which hasn't happened yet. And they had said when they adopted in December, they might consider pushing it out depending on what was going on with tourism and, you know, the pandemic and all of that. And again, we have a couple of new commissioners. So we're going to talk to them on the 30th of March, just to see if we're still full steam ahead or if they want to delay that a little bit. Interestingly, the zoning code amendments were appealed by 1,000 Friends, who did not testify in front of you, but they testified at the board, submitted actually a letter to the board. So they appealed, and then Dennis Tilka, who did speak the night that you guys took testimony, he was here and testified. He, I believe, intervened. So I don't know exactly what status that's in right now, but it's gone to the Land Use Board of Appeals. I think the argument primarily, I hadn't seen their formal argument yet, but based on the testimony, I think what 1,000 Friends objects to is allowing this use in the natural resource district. So particularly exclusive farm use, and I would assume that the timber zone as well. They're not, I don't think, appealing the entire program, but it's a question of whether dwellings in those zones can or cannot be used as short-term rentals. I feel like Mr. Tilka's concerns were different than that. So I haven't seen any of the written arguments. I don't even know if we've received them yet, but that's kind of interesting. But the way it works is the zoning code takes effect anyway. And so technically short-term rentals are allowed right now, but in the end, I suppose LUBA could remand that back to us for further action, in which case y'all might see it again. So that's going on. And then we have on April 14th, we have a 2-hour planning session with the board on the housing strategies project. So that's the other thing we're working toward right now. I think is that it, Karen, that's scheduled right now on the land use side anyway? Yeah. Okay. That's it.
Jennifer, am I remembering correctly that when we meet again in April, we will also be doing board elections?
May. Right. Yep. We hope to have our new or returning members, you know, official, and then do the officer elections in May. Yeah.
Steven, I do see your hand up. Okay. I didn't know if you wanted to speak.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, clarity. Jennifer, when is the next commission meeting that's likely to happen?
Your next, nothing in March. The next regular meeting is April 12th.
Is that after the Board of County Commissioners select who's going to, or I'm not sure when.
Probably not. I mean, I'm thinking that interviews, I don't know, because I have to figure out who's interviewing and when their calendars are open, but I'm kind of thinking interviews probably wouldn't happen until the first part of April. So they probably wouldn't have made the appointments official by then. And then technically the new terms don't start till May 1st anyway. So.
And I just started reading the policies of the county and, you know, I enjoy policy but it's difficult to navigate the system. But, you know, because Mary has this will be, Mary, is this your last meeting?
I'm going to stay on until my replacement is appointed.
Thank you.
It's not likely I'll be able to make meetings. I know I cannot make April 12th. I might be able to make the second meeting in April if nothing comes up in Gresham, though. But I will stay on just in case I can make it until my replacement is appointed.
As long as you're still officially the vice chair, you know, then you have a chair and vice chair in case Chair Stevens wasn't available. You know, then we get to resolve it by unanimously appointing one of us to serve to facilitate. So,
we'll work it out. We always have Brian. But I can tell you, I'm very busy with school stuff. It's dynamically changing every hour. So,
If I had to guess, I would say we probably are not going to have anything on April 12th. It'll probably be the 26th before we meet again. But
I feel you, Steve. The school stuff is getting crazy. But I was just going to say that since Commissioner Phillips is now dead to us, we need a new vice chair come on May. And so I was just going to flag to Commissioner Schrodel and Commissioner Murphy that your time is coming up and that you guys should maybe arm wrestle and let me know which one of you would like to be nominated in May.
It sounds to me that Murph and I can have synergy together and nominate you.
I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but thank you.
So. Well, I am unavailable on April 26th. So if there isn't a meeting on the 12th, then I won't be seeing you guys.
Thank you. I'll get an email out as soon as I can about the April dates. I just don't want to tell you for sure because then I'm afraid I'm going to think of something that we actually need to have. So I want to like look at my calendar again. But
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe that's the whole agenda unless anyone has anything else.
I don't know if you can hear me.
Oh, there's Louise.
Is that the new vice chair?
Yeah, I sent you guys an email. My internet connection's in and out, and I've had technical difficulties the whole meeting. But what I wanted to ask is, maybe I just missed it. I thought we had moved the March 22nd meeting to March 29th.
So we had Louise. We gathered. We wanted to see how many people could make that date instead, and then. What I was sorry that you were having technical problems. The board has asked us to come back to them on a couple of things to do some a planning session and some discussions. And so a couple of the projects are not going to proceed to the Planning Commission as quickly as we had expected. So no, we will not now need a meeting on March 29th. And I just really, it's been, our schedule's been shifting almost weekly lately. So my apologies, I didn't give you guys more notice, but we will not need to have a meeting on March 29th. And I will let you know soon about April 12th, but it's possible we won't meet again until April 26th.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you.
I had one other comment regarding one of the items that we didn't consider, but when I read the story, it was like, when do we get to hear this about this property where the guy burns down the cabin and with his wife in it and goes to prison? The Welch's one, if you didn't read that, it's interesting reading. So anyway, I hope that one comes before us because this sounds like a really interesting story.
Where do we find this story?
Yes.
It was in the documents. I don't know why they added that little tidbit, but I thought it was hilarious when I was reading it. I was going, oh my goodness.
Oh, we missed that.
What is in your packet, Tom?
It was in the packet. It was the Welch's Mountain Properties.
Oh.
They even had a little map of the Barlow Trail.
Yeah.
And a story about Mather who wanted to make Mount Hood a national park.
Right.
A little history story, and plus trying to murder his wife made it even more interesting. So.
Louis. That was the one with his face on it. Yes.
What's that?
Was fascinating.
Yeah.
Chair Stephen, I actually have a question. Of course, I want to wrap this up as well because we're getting late in the day, unless there's a page two on this. Well, no, there's not, thank goodness. I would be interested to know from staff and if there would be a script that could be read prior to public comment that would have verbiage that I'm accustomed to and that says we will not hear any disparaging comments of staff and or commissioners because it causes a challenge for the county to be a main party in a defamation suit if that were to take place. We have people that speak before us. I'm not sure how comfortable I feel, but, you know, we could get Zoom bombed by something. And if people don't, if I have to explain Zoom bombing, that it's just somebody just joining just for the purpose of disrupting the meeting.
I don't know. I mean, I certainly haven't heard, Karen, I haven't heard anything like that at the beginning of any of the county's meetings. I'm not aware that there's any policy on that. If you wanted something like that, it would certainly need to be vetted through county council first. And the question of what we can really say we won't listen to starts to get into some, you know, it's that sort of, where's that low? You know, I mean, obviously I know
they're
on another public body, but where's the free speech line and all of that? I don't know. So.
I just started in the policy. So, I mean, I'm just reading them one at a time.
I know the Board of County Commissioners, their introduction to public comment, it isn't what you can't say, but that they're asking for stuff that applies to county business. And it's a pretty short, brief statement about that this is what we are willing to hear. So it doesn't say no, but it says sort of yes. And then I clearly, I'm not being clear enough when I do the public comment part about saying, you know, bring forth any items that are not on the agenda, because that's not exactly obviously what happened. But so maybe we can have a two sentence deal that could accommodate it. And the board, like I said, the Board of County Commissioners, it's right on their agenda. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank
That's
you.
An interesting thought. Yes, I've heard about the Zoom things that happen, but
we can see if we can borrow something from, like you're saying, Tammy. I'm sure that would be fine. If we were going to get too formal with it, I'd want council to review it. And one thing I was thinking maybe, and we can put this into your script, because I think either maybe people don't really catch that distinction about the agenda. I almost wonder if it's a matter of saying, not just saying something that's not on our agenda, but almost following up and saying, here's what is on our agenda, right? We're going to talk about the work program. We're going to, and we can put that in the script for you. We're going to take testimony on this.
Yeah.
Is there something else? Because I think
tonight we're going to talk about this, but if you have something you want to bring up ahead of time, good to go.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we can add something.
Super good. And then, like I said, I think it's just a one sentence about focusing on county business. But all right, cool. Thanks, Stephen. All right, anybody else? Good.
Yeah, I have a parting shot. Jennifer, when you're looking at clear and objective standards for tree protection, feel free to email me. We do have some in Gresham.
Okay. I'll have Martha email you because she's on that project.
I was wondering if it would be Martha.
Yes, indeed. She's very excited. She is, but I keep telling her that the clear and objective standards is going to be the hardest part of the housing project. I think she kind of believes me, but I'm not sure. So,
yeah, they can get pretty complicated.
I'm really unincorporated Clackamas County, and I believe that's what you're talking about. I can't even imagine tree ordinance, but maybe we'll see how that comes down the pike. All right, everybody, got it? All right, Mary, I hope this isn't your last, but it may be. And thank you a million times. You
were
the best. The best. Thank you.
All right.
Good night. Get some tissues, Brian.
Night.
Good night.